All right, good evening, everybody. You're welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 24th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our participant code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Please click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 13. We're going to pick up where we left off, verse 18 through 30. So that's Matthew 13, verses 18 through 30. Hear ye therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he who receiveth seed by the wayside. But he that receiveth the seed by into stony places, the same is he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receiving it. Yet hath he not root in himself, but endureth for a while. For when tribulation or persecution ariseth because of the word, by and by he is offended. He also that receiveth seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. But he that receiveth seed unto the good ground is he that heareth the word, understandeth, which also beareth fruit, and bringeth forth some a hundredfold, some 60, and some 30. Another parable put he forth unto them. The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, Will thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, least while ye gather up the tares, ye root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together the first, the tares. And bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 13, verses 18 through 30. Okay, let's see. We don't particularly have a topic tonight. Last week we did file some papers, and I believe we read some papers. You know, we've got a lot of papers to file. We've got, goodness, I think we must have about 20 or more. I haven't really made a count on them. Papers that we have filed on behalf of other people for unlawful foreclosures. That's non-judicial foreclosures, which, of course, is unlawful. How can you have a non-judicial foreclosure on someone's property? But anyway... We have filed quite a few of them. We're looking for somebody to help us with the paperwork, someone who's got some background, maybe some paralegal background. I think we mentioned this last week, but we'll mention it again now. But anybody who's got some paralegal background that might want to assist us in some of our paperwork, because we'd really like to get back to filing habeas corpuses. But we do need someone to lead that once we set things up, so we'd want to get someone with some kind of a paralegal or some kind of a background working with court papers. Okay, Jen, let me move straight to you. Do we have anyone that wants to make any announcements?
Yes, Robert would like to make an announcement.
Robert?
Risto, yes.
All right.
Mr. Bob.
Well, the trial is still going on in Nevada. Prosecution is still up. And I'll tell you, they've limited the supporters to just a little small space out on the sidewalk. But they had a rally the other day. They had hundreds of people showed up from around the country. So nobody's forgetting about the Patriots. However, the judge has spent a lot of time playing prosecutor along with being a judge. And we even have the jury being allowed to ask questions during this trial. I guess I've never heard of that happening before, but and now the jury is asking permission to Google the case. Didn't get an answer to that. I don't know what the answer was going to be, but I found it interesting. They wanted to Google the case. We have Jan and I were talking to a lady in Nevada again today for a second time, and we're she's trying to help us with affidavits. She's now going to make contact with Mrs. Parker, anyway, Andrea Parker, the wife of one of the Patriots. And going to try to get her notes. She spends every day in court taking meticulous notes so that she can do videos for us. But this lady is going to try to get those notes and write affidavits for us. So hopefully that works. Other than that,
Robert, can you comment on the kind of question that the jury might ask? I mean, did you hear any questions that they've asked?
I have not heard all the questions, but they're allowed to ask questions of any kind. They can ask questions of the prosecutors. They can ask questions of the Patriots.
Brent, are you here? Is Brent online right now?
Just a sec. I'll take a look.
Yeah, I'm looking myself, so.
I don't see him.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see him.
Yeah, I think 317.
He may have come in as a on the wrong line, too, so I'm looking there. But, okay. Yeah, I'd like to get Brent's opinion on that. I never thought about the jury asking questions.
I've never heard of it, never thought of it, but they are this time.
Well, okay. All right, let's move on. Anybody else that has an announcement or something they'd like to share? I think April wanted to mention something.
Yeah,
is April.
She would like to talk about the habeas corpus affidavits. She's online here.
Okay.
Unmute her.
Okay.
You can find her.
And by the way, if anybody would like to, make an announcement about something or, give an update on whatever things you're working on or maybe on a committee or something with us. And, just get a hold of Jan, and Jan will make sure that he gets you in at the beginning of the call to give everyone updates or information on whatever it is that you're doing.
Well, I'm trying to find her. She's hiding.
We went there one time.
I Let me check her phone number.
And by the way, the Q&A is open. So the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star six. Any questions or comments?
Okay, I've got her. Okay, I unmuted you, April. Can you hear us? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. Well, I wanted to say first, me and Jim are working really hard to get things thrown out there as much as possible, as quick as possible. But what we're having a problem with is people that are submitting affidavits aren't paying attention to the rules. We need you not to notarize your affidavits until it gets approved. So please send in your affidavits in Word form also, because we're getting a lot of people that are sending them in PDF or they're scanning them in a JPEG. We cannot help and help you fix them if you don't put them in Word form. So I wanted to ask everybody that has affidavits that are submitting them, please work with us. We work as hard as you do. Those are Jim's words, and I go by them. So send in your affidavits in Word form once again, and please work with us. If we set up a time to talk with you, Skype with you, whatever, please try to make the time because we volunteer our time also. And I really, that's about it. That's what I wanted to say.
All right. Thank you, April. Jen, you might want to add a little note on the newsletter concerning affidavits and anyone who is sending in affidavits, that they read the instructions and so on. Maybe talk with April
right.
to help cover all the points on the one hand, but also try to keep things short. So, we want our newsletters to be reasonably short so most people will read them, hopefully.
Right.
So, okay. All right. Is there anyone else that has anything to say, anything to speak about?
Not that I know of.
Okay, I still don't see Brent in here, so let's keep an eye out for Brent if he shows up. We'd like to give him some time
okay.
and see what he could teach us.
Good.
Let me see. I don't
have
any particular...
We have a couple, three questions.
Oh, let's do that.
Okay, first question. Is the IRS fraud and or constitutional? Who are we paying taxes to? Is it the British?
Well, it's a fraud. There's no doubt about that. And we're paying it to a private corporation. It's not necessarily the British or any nation at all. It's a group of thugs. It's organized crime. I don't know if
okay.
anything, Gerard, you want to add anything to that? I don't know.
Well, I can add something to that. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Go
right ahead.
Well, I just had an interview with Pete Hendrickson. He wrote Cracking the Code, and he goes through, the scam that the IRS puts out there, and how they've played word games to get people to think that they're taxpayers. And, he went to jail and his wife went to jail. And while they're putting him in jail, people are using his method to correct the information reports that employers and corporations put out there claiming that you're receiving tax money. And the IRS has forms for correcting that stuff. And people are filling those forms out and you're receiving thousands of dollars in checks back. Now, why would they be writing people refund checks in the tens of thousands of dollars if what Pete is saying is fraud? He has all those checks documented that the IRS sent to people using Pete's methodology of correcting those information reports. So I don't want to – he has a very good video out that people should watch, and we're going to be putting out his interview. We had some trouble with the equipment and lost the interview. He doesn't know it yet. He's going to be upset, so we have to redo it. But that's coming. It's going to be on our site. And everybody should go in there and look at that and listen to it. And maybe we'll even have him on one night as a guest on a Monday night call. So we'll talk about that. But it's really, really interesting. And it is not unconstitutional the way they've written it. They basically, they got you tricked into saying that you're a taxpayer. And once you do that, then you've consented and you've contracted, and that's how they get you.
Right, but bear in mind, even that is the fraud. It doesn't matter how you get sucked into their system. The whole thing is a spider web, and
absolutely,
the whole thing is fraud.
If you don't rebut the presumption, under the law, silence is acquiescence. So
absolutely.
They're playing
right.
A game.
Anytime the IRS sends anything to you, you must respond. Okay, it's crazy not to respond. It'll build and build and build, and usually it'll take them a year before they get around to try to get you maybe into court if that's their plan. I mean, you know, sometimes they'll bother someone and then leave them alone for years and then come back and do the same thing over and over again. I mean, that's what they've done to me numerous times over the years. But in any event, you do have to respond. You do have to make sure it's certified, whatever paperwork you save all the paperwork. And you want to respond very specifically, you know. Usually in there they'll tell you what code, under what authority they act, okay. Go look up the code. You find out it doesn't fit you. You want to let them know in the response to them that it doesn't fit you. And at some point you want to do a notice and demand because now they're just, you know, annoying you and coming out after you constantly, and you know, so now you might want to do a notice and demand on them, and then of course if they're going to go after you in the courts, they're obligated, and they have been doing this. They usually notify the person, they let you know, because this again is more pressure on you, that look, if you don't do this or you don't do that, we're going to be filing a lien in the next 7 days. So that's the time that you need to become the plaintiff at that moment in time. You cannot wait one more minute. You need to be the plaintiff, and you need to take control of that case and go after them. And you know, look, the big position in this whole thing is making sure they have proof of claim and proof of fiduciary authority. Without those two things, they can do nothing. And you can find out if they filed that by just going to the, you know, your federal court district, okay, and going to the records department, and requesting anything that's been filed in your name. And you can tell them, particularly by the IRS, but by anybody, you will find out nothing's been filed. Now you got a case that you can win, but because they can't go forward, you can stop them in their tracks right there. And, of course, we do have – I haven't watched this video yet. Gerard just sent this to me yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I'm going to watch that video, and I'll take some notes and see some of the things. I did hear – I just skipped through it a few times, and I spoke with Gerard a little bit. There is quite a bit that the United States Supreme Court has put out on this. I know I've used a lot of that stuff. I mean, the Supreme Court is full of stuff that you can use to go out after the IRS. Bill Thornton's come up with some good things. He found a clause in Title 26 that says that Title 26 is not law. Okay? It's not law. So there's a lot of stuff out there that could be used. You just have to research it out and bring it together. I guess that's about it for now. I mean, we can talk more later on. People have some questions or something on that.
I just want to make a comment because I got a comment in here to render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Well, you see, they're taking things that are not Caesar's. In other
that's
words,
right.
If it's not law, it doesn't belong to Caesar. The sweat of your brow doesn't belong to Caesar. In this country, we are not slaves. We are sovereigns. And that's a difference, you know. If you're brought up in a slave system and you're a slave, well, yeah, I guess. But, you know, every man, this country was founded under the laws of God, nature's God, the God of nature and nature's God. And we were never meant to be slaves. That's something that man put in. God didn't raise us up to be slaves. He actually...
Yeah, we've got to remember the Federal Reserve is not federal. You know, and the IRS is not part of the government. There's no you can't find anything that leads the IRS to become part of the government. Two private corporations, one incorporated, I believe, is in Guam, and the other one I think is in Puerto Rico. Do you remember where the corporations are?
Yeah, Puerto Rico.
Gerard, is that correct? Puerto Rico and Guam, I think, right?
Yeah, Puerto Rico is the big one. That's where their big office is.
Right, and if you go and research that, you'll find out in one place it's IRS that's capped, and in another place you'll find they incorporate IRS in lowercase. I'm sure there's a game they play with that, you know, that putting the thing under the cup and trying to find out where it's at. So,
if you're not receiving federal money and you're not a federal citizen or a foreign national and all those other things that mean taxpayer, that nobody, you see, when it says taxpayer and income from all sources derived, it's not Webster's dictionary definitions. You know, in law, when you have a court case, you define your definitions. So, you know, I mean, even so, look, we come in and sometimes we say, you know, so-and-so here and after called complainer or perpetrator or pain in the neck. And now you just gave him that name and they're forced to use that through the case. So when the IRS calls you a taxpayer, hidden in that code is the definition of taxpayer. And we never knew what that was until they finally digitized it and put it into a computer where we could actually do searches, because they sprinkle it throughout this 6 million page document that they have. And lo and behold, we find out that taxpayer has a very specific meaning derived from very limited sources of income. And so, you know, if you're not engaged in an activity that they have control over, and don't forget, our designed a government so that you wouldn't have to pay any taxes. All you had to do is not engage in the taxable activity. Well, today, the way they're applying the code, sitting in your house in your chair is a taxable activity.
Right, they come out from after you saying that you need to file and you didn't file. You know,
right.
And they'll come after you for that, for not filing.
Look, people are getting educated, and it's getting very much harder for them, and I think they're scared, and they see the writing on the wall. You know, this thing is going to reach critical mass, and the first dominoes are going to fall. And once they start, you're not going to stop. So it's a very exciting time right now to be watching this stuff, you know. And, you know, they're going to be running like rats from a sinking ship. And that doesn't mean we won't suffer because of it, because, you know, and that's part of the unwinding of this thing. You know, if you just got rid of everything overnight, the economy would crash, the food would go off the shelves. We don't want that. So like the Wicked Witch said on Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, these things must be done carefully. You can't turn the system on its head and throw everybody in jail, because then, you know, what do you have when you have absolutely no system? You have anarchy, and you got the Wild Wild West, and that's, you know, in some respects, that's worse than the first situation. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes down. And, you know, the world money masters, they're pushing for a digital, they want everything digital. And I think that's one of the reasons they let Bitcoin go, because they want people to get used to the idea of this money that exists in electronic digits only. I mean, look, you can't even pay off your debts today. There's not enough money in existence. If they stopped the printing presses tomorrow and said, okay, just pay your debts, guess what? You can't do it. It hasn't even been printed yet, which is another fraud, because how could you owe money that's not even in existence yet? It's usury. It goes against the laws of God, what these people are pushing. It is a deception of the devil is what it is. So, you know, you want to make a contract with the devil, well, then you're going to reap from what the devil, you know, sows out for you. And that's basically what it is. Big promises, credit, this, that, you know. And can't get rich by writing your signature on a piece of paper, and that's what they're going to tell you, you know, that you can borrow your way into prosperity. Never going to happen.
Okay, Jen, any other questions?
Yes, and the next one is property tax illegal in a homestead state?
Property tax is illegal anywhere in any state. Just think about it. If they're taxing your property and you don't pay that tax, they're going to take it away from you, then it's not your property, is it?
No. Nope.
So it's illegal everywhere. Okay, anything else?
Okay. Are government student loans considered fraud on the basis of a promissory note?
You know, I don't really have too much knowledge there on that. I never even thought about that, so I never thought about it being fraud. So I don't know, Gerard, do you have an opinion on that? Do you know anything about it?
Well, if you're going to get into the nature of money, you can call it all fraud. But, you know, if you're going to put your signature on a piece of paper and borrow money, even if it's fiat money, you have a certain duty. I think, you know, to take a loan and not pay it back and then come back in and say, well, you're fraud anyway. It's not real money. You know, you're really pushing the envelope of honesty there. So it's, you know, I don't know the finer things of it. I do know that, you know, when you go and you take a mortgage on a house or even a student loan, they don't give you money. What they do is they make a journal entry in a book. It comes out of thin air, okay? So that bank didn't have $20,000 that they gave you. They wrote $20,000 in a journal entry in an account that you're able to write checks off of. And so then you start paying that $20,000 back. They take your signature. They say, look, we got this promise to pay, and they go out and sell your signature to some investor and say, look, it's this much interest for this many years. They discount it, and they sell it. Meanwhile, not $1 has left their pocket yet, right? So you're paying back this journal entry that they gave you. They turn around and sold your signature to some other bank, some other foreign corporation, because they say, look, we got this person's going to pay this much money over this many years, amortized, blah, blah, blah. And so you go ahead like a good little person and you pay the loan. And when you get done at the end of that $20,000, they erase the journal entry. But what didn't they erase? They created the $20,000 out of thin air, and you paid it back with real money that you earned from your employer in dollars and cents. And then you get done and they erase the journal entry. But the part that didn't get erased is what? The interest on that. See, that's why we have this huge debt, because all money is brought into existence by borrowing. And so you pay the principal back, but they created this interest out of thin air that you owed that wasn't even printed yet. So you see, that's why it's usury, because only God can make something for nothing. How can they hold you to something that they didn't give you in the first place and tell you that you owe it back to them? And then they sold your signature and made more money on the other end. So they end up getting paid like three times for this thing, you know. And then if you don't pay it, they write it off. And then they sell it as a bad debt for somebody else to chase you. They got every little nasty method of making money. So in that respect, if you're talking about student loans, in the respect that they're playing the game, yeah, it's fraud. And so, you know, but, you know, you go try to lay that out and bring it into a court of law, you're never – you're never going to get away with it, because as far as the judge and the jury, they're going to say, oh, I've had to pay my loan back. I'm not going to let you not pay your loan back. That's what you're up against. Now, if you think you can convince them that it's all a fraud, so if you convince them, they're all going to go home and not pay their money. And that's a dangerous situation as far as the courts are concerned and the banks are concerned. They're never going to stand for it. So it's never going to go away based on that one thing. It's a chipping away process. It's an education process. And really the best thing to do is get rid of the Federal Reserve and go back to real money. And Congress should have never given it away in the first place. And, you know, when Alan Greenspan was in front of Congress and they were basically questioning the Fed on that day, he said, we don't listen to anybody. We don't care what the government says. Nobody tells us what to do. And there was no public outcry. Of course, that was the day that Obama released his fake birth certificate, because they're always shaking one thing in your face while they're doing another. So that was the clue right there. People should have said, what do you mean? The Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express. They have no authority whatsoever. So, you know, it's click your heels together, you can go home, Dorothy, because it's all a fraud. When the people wake up to the fact that the emperor has no clothes and they proclaim it, that's exactly how long this fraud will last, until you wake up from the nightmare and you say, oh, that was all fake. So that's what they're hoping doesn't happen. They're perpetuating this lie this dream, this fraud. If everybody just stop giving them the credibility that they're asking to and stop answering them and stop sending them money and dealt in real money in gold and silver and other forms of money, they'd be done overnight. Anyway, I yield.
All right, thanks. Any other questions there, Jan?
Nope, that was the last one.
By the way, Gerard, you know, you might want to take your speakers and kind of twist them a little bit away from focusing towards your mic. I think I'm coming through your mic. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, no other questions? I'm sorry.
Right, no other questions.
Okay. All right, Brent, I don't see Brent here still, so we'll move forward right into Q&A. So we'll take the first question from Charles from New Jersey. Go right ahead, Charles from New Jersey. You got the
Yes, John, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, my question is, a bill of attainder, according to Black's Law, is any court action where there is no trial by jury. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if that is a fact. I'm not.
How
sure.
Is bill of attainder identified?
I don't know the answer to that myself. Gerard, are you familiar with that, the bill of attainder?
No, I read up a little bit on it a while ago. I'd have to brush up on it.
Oh, because I remember at one of our other phone weekly calls, you were talking about tickets. A ticket is a bill of attainder. You said that. I'm sure of it. Because
who said that?
You did.
No, I never said that. Maybe Gerard said that, or maybe possibly Brent said that, but I've never said that.
Well, maybe I am wrong, but the way I see it going is tickets are illegal.
Doesn't it say in the Constitution no bill of attainder shall be issued?
Article 1, Section 9.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I've never looked into that to understand what that's all about, so I really don't feel qualified to answer that. A code violation, you'd have to be part of a program that you signed up for, so to speak. For instance, let's say you go down and pull a building permit, okay? And now you're participating in a process, okay? And that building permit, now maybe you violate a particular code. They can give you a violation for that and even fine you for that. There are certain things because you became part of that agreement. Now, I don't disagree with getting a building permit and signing up to the program, but there is a way to get around that, so you don't have to deal with the town or the county or the city or any of those people and get your building permit. And that's simply by hiring an architect or an engineer to certify the work, and then you can go pull your building permit and to let it be known that they're going to be doing certification. So at the end of the program, the architect or the engineer will certify the work that it's all been done, you know, safely up to code, which, again, you need codes. There's no getting away from that. So that's one thing. Anytime you get a permit for anything, you're signing up to potentially, running into troubles with breaking a code and getting violated. If you can get away with it, it would be a big headache, of course, unless you're kind of in a rural place and no one's watching you, and you just go and build a structure and build whatever you want. But I wouldn't do it without an architect or an engineer certifying the work, so if anything comes up or any problems come about or maybe someone gets injured and they try to hold you liable for it because you didn't build up the code, they don't know what you did. You've got that paperwork. It's kind of like insurance. You know, you're driving without insurance, but if you have, enough money and property to be able to put up as against anything, if anything should happen for an accident, then you don't need to have insurance. So again, you know, you have to be part of a plan. So they can't write a statute or a code that interferes with our behavior. That's our responsibility, and if we injure somebody because of our ineptness or because we just didn't do the right thing, then we got to pay the toll. You know, you got to pay for that injury. You got to pay restitution. So anyway,
ultimately
the Supreme Court has ruled that statutes and codes and all that stuff. They didn't use the word codes. I know they used the word statutes. And there was another word they used. I can't think of it at the moment. It's only for bureaucrats. It's only for, you know, people who are elected or employed by the government. That's what statutes are for. And it is true, statutes are also written for certain things, and it's listed in the Constitution, okay, commercial activities. It's understandable. Right. There must be some codes there for certain things.
Okay, John, let me continue.
Wait a minute.
Can you hear me?
Traffic
yeah, hang on a second. We can hear you. Gerard, go ahead.
Traffic tickets are based on the fact that they're saying that you're driving in commerce when you're not. And that's the big issue about signing the ticket. Nobody wants to sign the ticket because what it does is it makes you, that's the beginning of your contracting with them when you acknowledge their authority over you. So if you want to really fight traffic tickets, you should go listen to Eddie Craig, who is an ex-cop in Florida that's teaching people. And when the cop pulls you over, if you want to learn the dialogue, a lot of people don't have the gumption to do this, and he asks for your license. He says, tape this. He says, make sure you have a tape recorder or a cell phone that you can tape on. And he gives you a whole dialogue. And, of course, you're going to give him your license. But at first, you're going to say, I do not wish to contract with you, and I am not driving in commerce. And so if you follow his dialogue at the window, and you do it very nicely, and you don't resist, and you do eventually give him your license, but you make note that it was done under duress. Then when you go to court, he has a whole dialogue that you give to the judge and the prosecutor and the police officer when you get them on the stand, and he gets them in a horn dilemma that they can't answer. And he tells you, if you followed my script when you got pulled over, they're finished. They're done. And he has very good success with that. And I think it's probably worth learning for people that want to go into traffic court and fight these things. I mean, you know, once you do it once or twice and you learn it and you're confident, look, they see you come in with a ticket, they'll throw your ticket out. They don't want you on the stand because what's going to happen is everybody will learn what you're doing and they won't show up anymore because they don't really have authority. I mean, we had a guy in court that did kind of that stuff, and he read the Constitution, and the next guy come up, he says, "I want what he said," because I want to know what he said. You know what I mean? So people learn really quickly, and you know, one of the things they did to us when we were fighting them in the local town courts is they started giving us court dates that were off court dates when nobody was there, and I think that's illegal because I think you're supposed to have, it's supposed to be done in public, in a public. And so one of the ways to fight that is make sure you got your court watchers and your people coming in. That way, you know, they try to operate in darkness, and they'll do any nasty trick they can to do what they got to do outside of the public eye. So that's my knowledge to that. That's the best advice I can give you there. So go ahead.
Before we go any further, hold on. Before we go any further, I just want to, because I'm looking a little bit into this bill of attainder, and I should have looked at this at an earlier time, but I never was directed to look at this for any reason. But if you go into Black's law, for instance, you'll find a bill of attainder is a legislative act directed against a designated person, pronouncing him guilty of an alleged crime without trial or conviction, according to the recognized rules of procedures and passing sentence of death and attainder upon him. Basically here, the definition in a simpler term is a legislative act that singles out an individual or a group for punishment without a trial. And of course, we know that the Constitution does not permit that. We have in Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 3, provides that no bill of attainder or ex post facto law will be passed. Now, I never really looked at that in the Constitution. I kind of bypassed that, and I'm sure there's a lot of things I bypass that I don't understand or really research yet, and that's one. But I find it very interesting. I'm definitely going to be looking deeper into this on a bill of attainder.
That definition that you read, that sounds to me like any law passed to automatically convict someone of guilt without a trial.
You got it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's traffic.
It's a legislative act that singles out an individual or group for punishment without a trial. So they make it illegal. And the fact that you broke, you can't prove that you didn't break the legislative statute or anything because you did, okay? But that's not a crime. And that as soon as you can, say, yes, I did go 10 miles over the speed limit, or you're unable to argue the point or whatever it is, you're guilty, period. There's nothing else to talk about. So it's trial by legislation is what it is.
And that's what every
trial by legislation. So in other words, if someone's going into traffic court and you just look and you see there is no jury, there has been no indictment, you saw no grand jury, how is this legal?
It's not.
I mean,
can you give it to Smith as
a bill of attainder?
Look, I get stopped. I got kind of a heavy foot, so I get stopped reasonably. Well, often. I also have a radar detector, so as long as that's on. I've never been stopped with my radar detector on, by the way. It's a very good one. But in any event, a lot of times I'll get in the car and I don't do it. I was recently stopped going quite a few miles over the speed limit locally, and I treat the cops with respect. I'm not going to argue with them or anything, I have a pretty good record of leaving without getting a ticket. But I would say that's probably more times I walk away without the ticket. More times the car, I don't know why, it's just they do, And I don't give them any hard time, and I don't get into the lawyer stuff or anything. Now, the other part of that, if I do get a ticket, I have one paper that I file with that court, and I would say maybe 50% of the time, I never hear from that court again. The other 50%, they don't want to hear about it, and and they're going to find me guilty, and they do, and I just pay the fine and move on, and I throw it into a file. I have a file that I keep here for those things. One day I may go sue them all, in one court case, but I don't make a big stink about it. I'll go into a court. I don't bother with tickets no more, but it used to be you can go in and you could try to make an argument. If you're going to argue with anyone, you argue with the judge, but you got to be careful. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action, and that's what that judge is, an ignorant individual. Any judge acting as a judge in traffic court or any of these town courts and city courts, they have no idea of the Constitution at all. They have no idea of anything. I mean, these are just ignorant people, ignorant to the law totally. I mean, rarely will you get anyone that has some kind of background in understanding law.
Yeah, they probably don't know what a bill of attainder is anyway. And when they bring his attention
to it, I'm sure they don't. I wasn't even actually sure of what that was until you brought it up, and I'm looking at it, and I never really looked at it before, and I can pick up on it very quickly once I start reading a few things here on what it is. But you're right, for them to know what a bill of attainder is, I'm sure you're right, 100% right. That's a good point to bring up in that courtroom. If you're going to fight a case, is to bring up the fact that this is a bill of attainder, and it's against the Constitution. Right there, another thing you can use for a violation of your unable rights, that gives you the ability to pull it into, that gives you cause to pull it into the federal court, okay? Which is very interesting. You know what? I think I'm going to start fighting tickets because I think I can take a lot
I
of
want to do it because
for,
it's fun. It's fun, John.
It's an easy case, man.
Cousin's got some tickets, and I'm going to go to court, and I'm going to represent him. And when they ask me, do you have a law license, I'm going to say, what do you mean? You don't need a license for justice. Justice is a state of nature, just like gravity. You don't need a gravity license.
My client says he does not understand,
and I don't understand why you would allow them to push a bill of attainder on us. Any man who pledged his solemn oath to defend the Constitution should be on my side, and I I expect you to dismiss this without any question. So how do you think that court case would go, John?
Well,
probably
I got to
say...
Probably
hold you in contempt.
No, you can't be in contempt for using the law.
Well, they'll do whatever they want. Half of what you said I missed because I don't know whether I was disconnected from the Internet or what, but I just didn't hear anything for a while. Then you came back in. So,
oh, you want me to rewind it? Because I got my jets going. I'm ready for this.
Yeah, go right ahead. Give it a second shot.
All right. I represent Mr. Zaccaro, and during his arraignment, he says, I do not understand. And I can see that because I don't understand either. I don't understand why you would allow them to issue a bill of attainder when you know it's forbidden Article 1, Section 9 in the Constitution. I would expect a man of honor to just dismiss it out of hand, tell the prosecutor he's out of his mind trying to do this to us.
Okay, but you know what would happen in a town court when you'd bring that up?
Yeah.
No constitution in this court.
And
no,
then I'll
the
refer
thing,
to Article
The first thing
six.
The judge is going to do is refer to the prosecutor if there's one there. And I've noticed in the past couple of years, they have prosecutors there. Remember, Gerard, we used to go to court. They were never a prosecutor there. It seems that they have at least one person there to be the prosecutor at this point.
They're always there now. The reason the prosecutor's there is because they do not want to go to trial. They want to make money quickly. So if they can get you to talk to the prosecutor and do a deal, you're done. You don't have to come back again. So that's what that's all about, is to get the money as quickly and easily as possible. Then you go in the back room and the prosecutor pays nicely. Oh, we'll mark it down to park it on the pavement. I mean, it'll cost you $240. And the people go out and say, oh, thank you, thank you. No marks on my license. Oh, thank you. And you pay the bill.
Yeah, you are right.
And so
what's the caller's
about.
First name again?
Charlie,
okay. Yeah, because I must have disconnected from the Internet, but I had to reboot my, my browser, and I can't see your name on here. But in any event, Charlie, you know, what I've been doing for quite some time now, I mentioned to you, just send them a paper, and half the time it goes away, the other half the time they want their money. And I stick it in the file, I pay the bill. But I think you just convinced me, because this is so easy, to not do that anymore, to bring this paper up into court and add this bill of attainder stuff. And then once they go after me for a fine, I'll pay their fine, but I'll move it into – and you know the interesting thing, you're in a court, and here in New York, I don't know what they've done in other states – but they unified the courts, okay? You go into a silly little town court or village court which has no power, no authority, no constitutional anything to permit such a thing, okay? And you go into these courts, you'll see a sign there here in New York that they're part of the unified court system. And since they're part of the unified court system here in New York, guess how much money it costs to move your case from there into a federal court for cause. It
Nothing.
Cost $0.
Yeah.
Right. Because everything's been paid for on their end. They call it a criminal. Well, they actually don't even call it a criminal thing, but we know that they're trying to do. You know, they'll go to jail if you don't pay the fine or do these other things. But in any event, and they don't have the power or authority to fine or incarcerate. But, yeah, this is a really, really, really simple case to produce in federal court, and I can't think of one federal judge that would want to risk himself on a silly ticket other than to fine for your wherefore clause, as long as it's reasonable, and move on. And that's...
Oh, yes.
I'm going to court.
I remember you reading from the judge's law book about how a judge is to make a decision based on liberty, and he's always supposed to make his decision in favor of the Constitution and of the people, of freedom itself. I don't know if those were the exact words, but that was the idea. Do you remember that?
Can you repeat that again?
He's supposed to err on the side of the people if there's any question.
Yeah, that's the way a judge is supposed to make up his mind.
But they don't do that because there's no money in it. And what
right.
about the fact when you come in, you ask the judge, well, let me ask you something, Your Honor. Does this ticket have a fine of more than $20? Yes. Well, yeah, of course. The state surcharge is already $50 on it, no matter what it is, right? And you say, okay, then I want my right to a grand jury and a trial. You see, one of the things Eddie Craig said, if everybody pled not guilty and demanded a trial, you could shut the court system down in less than a month. Because they
could absolutely
give a
right.
trial to everybody that comes in there. And they're not going to want to do a jury, and they're not going to want to do a trial because that's too expensive, too much time. Look, they want to make that $200-$300. That's why they got the prosecutor there. And he's going to come on, let's make a deal. You're not going to go to trial. Look, they don't want to go to trial. They really don't. And
right.
that's why when John writes that one paper, and they know that they have to answer it, that they need it. It's not even worth them answering it. Now, what they do is they throw the case away because they say, what are we going to make on this guy? $50, $100, or whatever it is, and I got to sit down and write this paper? They don't want to do it. They throw it out. This is not
good.
Worth it.
Good. Because that's the
well,
seventh
also,
minute.
Also, this is a Nisi, these are Nisi Prius courts. And
right.
Nisi Prius courts have no power to fine or incarcerate. And as a matter of fact, that's true of an equity court. Any court that's running with a single judge in it, okay, is an equity court. It is not that's a constitutional court, but it's an equity court. And it still has to abide by the Constitution, of course. But it's a Nisi Prius court. In other words, you cannot be fined or incarcerated in that court. Okay, only a court with a tribunal has the power and the authority to fine or incarcerate. And that, of course, is called a court of record.
Right.
And so there's so many things here that could be used. Another position that could be used against this is the fact that they are in the Nisi Prius court. Okay, and it's as far as I'm concerned at that point, then they're extorting money out of you, aren't they?
Yes,
they set up these radar traps and stuff, and they're now going through extortion. Give us money or we're going to put you in jail. Give me your lunch money or I'm going to beat you up. Same thing, nothing's changed, right?
Actually, I want a jury trial because I want to inform the jury that their duty is to knock the teeth out of this government that has too much
power.
Yeah,
but you have to have a jury that has been really orientated correctly, that they've been freed to do as they please and not as the legislator says or not as the judge says or not as the prosecutor says or not as they are told by any individual but by your heart, okay? And if you can't get to the jury to understand that first, you probably will lose because out of fear or the people, you know, listening to the judge because they believe him over you. After all, he's got his cape. He sits on a high seat all the way up in the air. He looks like God, you know. So
if
he
tries to talk
to the common Joe, so to speak. Huh?
If the judge tries to talk to the jury, I'll object. I'll say, God wrote the law on every man's heart. You don't need to tell them what the law is. They know.
Bear in mind, you are now in a court, okay, where a judge is ruling, and unless you know this guy, that he would or wouldn't do certain things. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. He may have you handcuffed with your hands behind your back, a handkerchief around your mouth to gag you and move the court on. Of course, that of course, would be really a serious crime if you know how to fight that one. Look, at the simplest things is the point you have, okay? First of all, you look for the constitutional violation. You just tell the judge once, you tell him on paper, and then you don't give that court authority no more. You move it into a federal court. You go after him at the position of a bill of attainder. You go after him at petition of violating your unalienable rights of due process. You go on after him for quite a few things. The fact that it's a Nisi Prius court, and they're acting, you know, a Nisi Prius court that is executing fines and possible incarceration is acting under the color of law, isn't it? You got all kinds of criminal charges in here that you can go after the judge and all the participants in that. You can go after, you can even go after the stenographer in there because that person's participating. Okay, so you could sue them all in federal court, and you can get a lot of money because there's so many violations here. And, you know, the more and more I think about it, I can make a whole list of these things, and we can make a lot of money here.
Yeah, and not only that, but it would really shut their mouth.
Well, what will happen, though, is bear in mind, you know, anybody teaching something like that, all right, they will go after them any way they can to get them. And that's what happened to this guy. Gerard, what did they get this guy for that was the IRS thing? Didn't they go
they
after
said,
he went to jail?
They said that his book was a illegal tax dodge. You know what I mean? They got that business where you're teaching people to do illegal tax dodges or some crap.
Right. Yeah.
They wanted to outlaw his book, and they lost. They lost that case. They said, oh, you can't put this book into print. And the jury actually ruled against him because I guess it was so radical that they wouldn't go for outlawing his book. You know, and there was nothing in the book that was radical at all.
Yeah, but he did go to jail for something, right?
Well, that's completely...
He went to jail for promoting what they consider an illegal tax dodge, although they could... Look, you read... When you watch that movie, he'll explain to you what they did to him.
Tax evasion.
Right.
Okay.
And it's not tax evasion.
Right.
What he was
teaching. that's where the danger is. In you know, we could talk about these things.
That's what they're going after Bob Schultz for.
Of course, yes, exactly.
But they'll
do it in the guise of something else. They might even change. Look, they'll come if they can find you for something else that they can build some trumped up charges on you. They'll go after you for that, just to shut you up, just to teach you a lesson, just to beat you up, just to let you know who the boss is. And so on. I mean, they'll do it for those purposes.
Absolutely.
And
look,
hopefully they'll force you to stop from their perspective.
Robert Schultz put out that blue paper that teaches you how to go into your employer and stop the withholdings from your paycheck. And the IRS honors that when they get that. When you fill those forms out and you use the words that Robert Schultz says, they will never come after you. But they went after him for teaching it. So just like Pete Hendrickson, well, they're saying that he's teaching an illegal tax. What did you just say? An illegal tax thing, dodging thing.
That's again
evasion,
yes.
Evasion, tax evasion. Well, while they're charging him with that, on one hand, on the other hand, they're issuing millions of dollars worth of checks of people. He has them all photographed of giving these people their returns back based on his information using their forms. I mean, right there, the two don't line up. How could you put him in jail and yet you're refunding all this money to all these people that are using his methodology? The two things fly in the face of each other, you know?
And yet they would not go after the author of a book who's writing about how to steal. The name of the book is Rules for Radicals, written by Saul Alinsky. He wouldn't be charged by these people.
Well, that's right. Because those are the people in charge that are making the laws.
Yeah, the
radicals. Look at our legislators aren't even writing these things. They don't even know what this is about. And it's a construction of a statutory prison is what it is. Okay. And our representatives are just taking money, okay, from special interest groups. They're selling their vote, and that is illegal. Look at, you know,
what
nobody should sit down and discuss what their desires are to an individual who's elected and connected with money. But that's what they're doing.
These are all bills of attainder.
Huh?
From what you're saying, it's legislative conviction.
Bills of attainder.
That's
a very good point. I'm glad we had this discussion because I never looked at this before, and wow, it's pretty powerful.
And what I'd like to do is I'd also like to dig into the meaning of ex officio law.
Right. Well, that's a law that if you did something that they say is illegal and it's not, then they go make a law of it and then they come arrest you and try you for it. That's an ex post facto law. In other words, you're being punished for a law that wasn't written yet, and then they get you later because you committed the act prior to the law. Ex post facto law.
I'm looking for it now.
Article 9, paragraph 3, right there with Bill of Attainder.
Yeah. That's what the SAFE Act did, because you could own a rifle with a 30-round magazine, and then they come out with a law that makes it illegal, and then they tell you that if you have one, you're a criminal.
That's an actual fact of law, right?
Right, because you had that before the law was made, and now they're telling you that you're a felon because you have this thing that it was perfectly legal to own until they put their signature on this bill. That's an ex post facto law, that you just took something that was legal and made it illegal.
Now, just think about this. All of this goes back to the Bill of Attainder again, because just think about this. It says here, no Bill of Attainder or ex post facto law will be passed. So anything that has been legal, because there's no law on it, if you go back to the beginning of our nation and even work your way through the last couple of hundred years, and you've been exercising a particular thing for 100 years, it's been exercised by people, and all of a sudden they write the law. You see, that can't be passed. They cannot pass it.
Well,
because some of the people can commit it, and some of the people can't commit it to begin with if you play by the rules that they've made. Okay, which is saying, well, if you can prove that you've had this prior, we're not going to convict you. They used to do that. Remember,
you were grandfathered in.
That's just a way for them to get around the game, to just take the next step closer to eventually getting rid of it, which they did with the gun law here in New York, which, again, it gets back to the fact of a statute in order to tie your hands, to imprison you in their structure of the world that they want to create. So, you know, again, anything controlling my behavior is unconstitutional, and it violates my unalienable rights, and I don't want to know about it. Now, again, we have to live in a world of reality. We have to be careful. Sometimes I'd rather pay the fine than go to jail for 6 months, you know, or something like that. You know, so you're stuck. They got the gun to your head. What are you going to do? I haven't got time to sit in jail. I got too much to do out here, you know?
Okay. Well, you people from New York are going to be very happy to hear about this. But 6 major gun manufacturers are not going to sell any firearms to any government agency in New York. The state police, federal police, the marshals, whoever they have. They are not going to honor the exemption because of those guns were outlawed for people to own. They say, okay, all people from New York are not going to own it. And these are major gun dealers like Empire Firearms, Six Hour. I can't remember all
six. They should make an exception to, for instance, a sheriff that might say that I'm agreeing with you guys and I won't exercise those laws and I will protect the people in my county, and then they should sell to that individual. And that in itself, just for doing that, would help to pump up and to get other sheriffs hopefully to step up to do the right thing and get a coalition of sheriffs.
Yes, you know? I agree. I definitely agree.
So if you have a list of those manufacturers or whatever, not manufacturers, but those what would you call them, sellers?
Yeah, they are manufacturers.
Oh, okay. Well, if you have a list of those, maybe you can send them a letter suggesting what we spoke about here concerning sheriffs, and then they can notify all the sheriffs in New York, letting them know that we will sell to you if you want to sign up and commit to the fact that you will uphold the law. And,
I did write a letter like that, but it was just a press release. So would you like me to forward it to you, and you could direct it to the state sheriffs?
There's
two or three
sheriffs that have come out and said they will not enforce the SAFE Act, and their necks are on the line for doing that because Cuomo will fire them for that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we would have to have a committee to work with that kind of a project. I couldn't do it personally because it would take up too much of my time, because I got way too much to do. But if we put together a committee concerning that to try to work towards that, if you wanted to help, you get a hold of Jan, you get him under the directory. If you want to be the chairman of the committee, and we'll try to get people to work with you and start a plan to help to do something like that. And as you're doing that, you may discover doing other things that will empower sheriffs and educate sheriffs to the Constitution and what the unalienable rights are of the people, you know? So if you want to help us, you know, always looking for people to help. we're an active group. We must be an active group. We got to get people active. If they're not active, then we're not going anywhere, are we?
Well, we are waiting for what? Our seat in the grand jury room?
Well, we're waiting.
Are we just waiting, or are we pushing?
No, no. Well, we are kind of waiting. We're waiting to take a power and authority in the courts by administrating to all of the juries, the people, not the government, not an elected official, not a person that works for the government. We, the people, have to take control of administrating to the juries, both the grand jury and the trial jury. That means to orientate them. And you got 8 hours, one day, for the jury to come in to be informed and what their powers are, what their authority is, how the court works, basically, for whatever they need to understand. The fact that if there's no injured party, there is no crime. The whole focus and point of a court case is to restore the injured individual. In any criminal case, it's to restore the injured individual, not incarcerate. I mean, that may be
right.
A necessity in certain cases, but not incarcerate. Our jail should not be filled with people that are code violators, nor should it be filled with people that injured somebody that they call as a criminal offense, but really wasn't something, you know, that they did out of anger or anything. And maybe just because they were dumb and did something stupid, they'll call it a crime. We say, well, you know, it's more, ignorance or not being careful, but let's not put the person in jail. You're only creating a more hardened criminal by doing that. Let's take the person and make them restore the individual they injured. They'll learn from that. Others will learn from that, and we'll become a more moral society. Right now, we're not correcting the children, so to speak. You know, we're beating the hell out of them. We're beating the piss out of them, but we're not correcting them, and that's not what you do. You know, you talk to a child, you explain to them, and now you have to pay the price of the injury you've done. Isn't that what we do with our children? Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing with our children?
Yes.
Well, you know, people, in a sense, that's what the law, which is God's law, is to do to the people. You know, take them into the woodshed and give them a spanking. That's what the law does. And now you got to go fix the problem that you created now. And we're going to learn from that. We're going to be more careful the next time. We're going to be better citizens, better people. And I don't shy away from the word citizen. I won't allow them to rob that word. But in any event, we'll be better people for it.
Okay,
it's just
I hear
so logical and obvious, you know?
I think when you impanel a jury, you make sure they're a jury of the people, not citizens. I explained the difference between the two in the pre-trial checklist, that the questionnaire you give them. Explain to them that the citizen is the subject of the government, and the people own the government.
Bear in mind this one thing, okay? We're using the terms of the citizen as they define. Now, a citizen is part of the civil, you know, society, the civil part. I'm not exactly sure how I might say that.
Yeah.
But look at, even in the Constitution, it gives the power of to the federal government, to the legislators, in order to have for a person to become a citizen of this country, or this nation, shall I say, because ultimately, you know, they can be in any state they want, and they can move as often they want. You know, you're a citizen of the whole United States, and that's why they call us a U.S. citizen. And I know in the man on the land stuff, they teach you, you know, you don't want to get involved in that, you know, being called a citizen, you don't want to be a U.S. citizen. And what they're doing is they're really giving up the meaning of words and that's even spoken in the Constitution and giving it up. And they're losing a way to articulate and communicate concerning that situation. The fact is they're robbing our words and changing the meanings. And if we allow them to do it, then we're empowering them. We're giving them more authority. We're giving them more the ability to communicate their lie and their fraud. We got to stop and say, no, I don't accept that. And that's what we try to teach at National Liberty Alliance here, is let's call it for what it is, a fraud. Let's not go into the courtroom and make some quote and click our heels and think we're going to be delivered into the world of justice, because it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Right.
I was started out there myself, and you get beat up in court. and come out after you with viciousness. And if they can put you in jail, they will, you know? So why don't we just take them and deal with them? Don't argue the point there. Make the point clear. Let them know what they're doing wrong. They need to correct it now, because the moment I walk out that door, we're going into the federal court, and I'm going after you for violating my unalienable rights, and you're doing this under the color of law. That's a crime, and these statutes are written for them, for the bureaucrat abusing their powers, that they get 20 years in jail or 5 years in jail or 3 years or 1 year, whatever it is. I'm good with that. Let's go with that. Okay, and they want to get them for restitution for the injury to me, wasting my time. As a matter of fact, when I go back to traffic court, not that I'm going anytime soon, but if I do have to go again, I think I'm going to bring a bill with me and give the judge a bill for my time to have to come down there, along with my paperwork, along with, I know at that point I'll probably have to move it into a federal court, but it's something I'm going to think about.
Yes, that's good. What I'm thinking of doing is just showing up at night court and look at people. Are you here to pay a ticket? Yeah. All right, tell you what. Let me represent you, and I'll get it dismissed.
Yeah,
really?
You know,
are
not
you a lawyer? I'll say, no, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a constitutional expert.
Yeah, but you know they're not going to let you represent them.
How can they stop me?
Because they got the guns.
Oh.
You know, they're the ones that take control. I can't tell you how many times I went in court and I was told I can't speak. You know? Now you write a paper concerning the right to counsel, okay? And then file it, and if they don't go along with that, you know, you give them that memorandum. You can create a memorandum. In fact, I'll post one. You can create a memorandum of that and then just hand it into the court. So now I'm going to speak on behalf of this individual. And if they say no at that point, now you bring it into the federal court for violation of unalienable right of counsel, violating unalienable right of counsel, violating your unalienable right of due process, acting under the color of law. If they're pressing statutes on you, you can go after them for, encouraging and trying to, well, actually for doing the bills of attainders. That's RICO. They're making money out of that. That's RICO right there.
Yeah.
You got
I would file all that with the county clerk?
No, you go file it with the federal court. You move it for cause, and there's no charge to that.
Oh yeah, and I go.
I would never be any more than 5 minutes in any town court if I went to fight any of these things, because there's only one of two things that's going to happen. First of all, I would do it through my paperwork and not even show up, and if I don't hear from them anymore, fine. But if they now respond and make me come to court, I wouldn't spend any more than 5 minutes, and I would give them the necessary information they need. Okay, which again is a memorandum on the right of counsel. You can write a memorandum on the right of due process. You can memorandum of all these things, and you give it to them and say, "Now, Your Honor, are you going to obey the law, or what are we going to do here?" And if they continue the case, then I would object to the case. I'd let them give me my fine. I'll pay my fine. I'll go out, and then file with the federal court for all of those violations. And you're moving it for cause. You can have 4 or 5 different causes there. No problem. You can pick them up very quickly. You know, the bill of attainder, the right of due process. You know, you can pick them up very quickly.
Hey, that's great. How do I get all those forms? I think you said they're downloadable on Microsoft Word.
If you go up onto our page.
Yeah.
Which, right away, we're going to offer very soon. I'm going to try to work something out. We're going to offer a course on exactly how to write paperwork and how to get into court. I'll talk about that next week, because I'm just starting to work from
home. Yeah, that's good.
We do have something on our website, but I'm going to get something a little more stronger. But look, if you go up to our website and highlight, grand jury, I think it is. Let me get out to the page and look myself. Okay. Okay. Go out to our website and highlight grand jury. And when you highlight grand jury, come down to dockets, okay? And click on dockets. Now, right there is all of our papers, okay? If you look at your papers filed, okay, read all those papers. And you might want to read the law documents we put up there because they're all important cases, okay? But you read that. You can also read up maybe on a habeas corpus, and you can read up on a judicial foreclosure if you have those two problems. But you read all those papers. Inside those papers, you will find everything we're talking about. And you can pull a paragraph out of this one and a paragraph out of that one. Okay, you got everything you need. And I'm going to post some more memorandums up on our website. One particularly is the right of counsel. I'm going to do one so people can use that memorandum. All you do is put the heading stuff, or, you know, this person, you know, against that person, and, you know, against whoever it is you're going after, and, which would be the judge maybe, and the prosecutor, there, and, you know, the stenographer. I would even go after him. I mean, isn't he part of the game? Isn't he paid to force? I'd bring the cop in maybe. At the end of the day, I'd let the cop out, and maybe at the end of the day, I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't, press anything against those people. But the point is you want to go after the judge anyway, the prosecutor, because, you know, the prosecutor is a lawyer, and the judge might or might not be a lawyer. And they know. They should know. No, they claim they know. They know so much more, you know, because you're so stupid. You can't come up here. You can't play ball with us. You know, we're playing hardball. You come in with a little Spalding. You know, that's their opinion and their thinking, you know. But anyway, you go after them, take them into federal court.
Yeah, like I just clicked on summons on that page, and it brings up United States District Court for the Northern District of New York. And then would I be able to erase the names here and type in the name of the defendant
summons.
I want
look
to?
That's a form of a summons. You just take out the personal information and you put in your personal information.
Yeah.
And you create a summons. You could take our, you know, the action at law, and you can use whatever you want out of that, and you put all your facts into it. You put the name for your case into it. Look at,
there's this a PDF. I can't edit it.
It won't allow me. They control so much that lawyers don't know how to act without a form, okay? Now, they may write their papers, but they're still using a form to write those papers. And it's top secret. You know, this is priestly stuff. You can't know this. I mean, you know, I learned it, but, you know, I learned it from a lawyer. You know,
I'm not allowed to know where to get this form that I can edit and write on?
Well, everything we got is a form that you can edit. You could just take it. But look, next week I'm going to post something this week, and I'll talk about it next week concerning, you know, how to go into a court. What kind of papers do you need? What are all the papers you need? You know, you need a summons, of course, and you need an action at law, you know, a paper which is called often a complaint. And I wouldn't call it a complaint. I call everything I do an action, okay, because I'm not complaining to nobody. I'm coming for action. And also it's action at law, which means at law means if you go into any dictionary, you know, Black's Law Dictionary, Bouvier's Dictionary, at law means under the common law. Okay, that's what it means.
Right.
And I put those footnotes there. You know, when you use Microsoft Word, I don't have the Word up there. I probably should post them, because if you take the Microsoft Word, when you highlight a sentence with footnotes in them and you cut them and paste them into another document, the footnotes come with it. Okay. And when you're doing the PDFs, you should be able to cut and paste and put it, but you're going to go back and cut the footnotes. The footnotes are extremely important because it defines exactly what you're saying. And any word that we might use that they may have twisted around to another meaning, we make sure they understand what we mean it by. So that's why we put a lot of footnotes. And the explanation, the meanings of the words, more often than not, is usually Supreme Court rulings. U.S.
Absolutely.
Very, very powerful. So, anyway.
You know what?
I really want to put something together for next week and bring it to the people who are interested in really learning law. Look, here's what you need to do. Okay. Anybody who wants to be able to fight their own cases in court. Again, next week I'm going to offer a course. If you take that course, also you take our civil and the civics course is free. Okay. We have a civics course. Constitutional course is free. So you take those two courses and you should. You read our cases. That in itself is a course. That's your ammunition. You got so much stuff in there. You should save that. And whenever you go into a court, you go through them and you pull these things out and you cut and paste them and build your case around that. You put the facts around that. And the law documents that we have up here, okay, are extremely important. Look, you don't think about going to fight in court, do anything. If you haven't read these lists of what we got up here, and I'll go through a few of them, if not all of them, the Anti-Federalist Papers and, of course, the Federalist Papers, the Bill of Rights. We have a common law handbook. You should read that. You have the Declaration of Independence.
What is that?
Oh, that has to do with why can't I think
of
that?
You do so much paperwork, you don't even remember it all.
No, I know what it is, I just can't think of the word. It's, the Magna Carta, okay? That's what that has to do with, the Magna Carta, okay? Marbury versus Madison, if you haven't read, what a powerful paper. That's a paper to be sat down and studied. Look up the words and meanings of words if you have to, but understand the case of Madison, Marbury versus Madison. Miranda versus Arizona, an extremely, extremely, one of the most powerful cases is right there, Miranda versus Arizona. It's unbelievable. Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, the Constitution. And read Thomas Jefferson's On Politics and Government. Okay. And U.S. versus Williams. I mean, that's what our National Liberty Alliance is built around, U.S. versus Williams.
That was Judge Alito. Judge Alito wrote the decision in that, right? Not Scalia.
Not
that was Alito.
How come I can't think of his name? Gerard, help me.
Scalia.
Right. Yeah, Judge Scalia, the one that they murdered. Assassinated.
It was Scalia, even though he died, but that law is still there.
That's 1992.
Okay. Moving along.
What I'm trying to tell you is all of these papers here is your education. The other stuff, the two courses we put together is your framework, okay? And then I'm going to get together a course for people that'll teach you all the paperwork. And we also look at, you got Bill Thornton. We got all of his audio up here. Now, he has some fundamental errors, and which are big, okay? His one big, big error, okay, is the king of the court. The king of the court is the creator of the universe. It's not you. It's not me. We may be considered princes, but we're not the king of that court. The tribunal, okay, which is the grand jury or the trial jury, the tribunal is the king's bench. They are there to represent the king of the court. That's how common law is created. And so, you know, Bill Thornton makes that one error, okay? And that's a huge error because your thinking changes when you understand it from one perspective to the other. You know, I don't come in there into the court under my authority. You know, I come into the court under the authority of the law, okay, which goes right to the creator. But Bill Thornton's stuff and his work and what he teaches, a lot of great stuff, fundamental things, and you need to pick up on that, okay? So that's another course you need to take, and it's a series of audios.
I know now, I'm taking them. They're very good.
Now, when you go through all this stuff, in the beginning, you say, how am I going to ever remember this, you know? Wow, this is overwhelming. That's what you're going to say. Forget about that. Everything's overwhelming to you when it's brand new. It doesn't matter. Two things you want to do. Number one, of course, is to understand what you're reading. Move slowly through it. Use your dictionary. Use your legal dictionaries. Really understand what you're doing. And so the key thing is to understand it. Don't try to remember anything. Just try to understand it. Because once you understand something, you'll never forget it. And all
right.
of a sudden, as time goes on, things will start sliding out of your mouth that you didn't even remember that you remembered. You say, where did that come
from?
I mean, it's just the nature of our mind, the way God created us. It happens. So that's the key thing, is really understanding, okay? And as you go through these things, you know, you read this paper, you read that paper, you listen to this video or that audio, you know, and you go through all these things, you'll find a lot of the you know, fundamental ideas is found here and it's found there and it's just repeated over and over again in different ways and different things. So all of a sudden, all this stuff starts to become very familiar to you just by reading, you know.
You're right.
One of the greatest Bible teachers that I have had in my life, and I found very early in life, and still to this day, you know, even though he passed away. But nevertheless, one of the key things, you know, he taught a lot of studies. He's written a lot of short books on major studies in the Bible. He taught how to apply scripture against scripture, line upon line, precept upon precept, understanding scripture in light of scripture, you know, and all those fundamental things. And one of the key things he says on learning is read. Read, 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 read. Doesn't matter that you don't understand it all. Whatever you get, you get. You look up what you can and you move on and read. And that it will make you the most powerful individual in any subject matter that you are pursuing. Because that's when again, understanding is the most important thing. Don't move on till you understand what it is that you got. And sometimes you have to move on, but don't worry, you'll get back to it. Those little bumps are so important that it will come back, and you might need prerequisitional conclusions inside your mind, okay, in order to understand a certain concept that you were reading and you couldn't understand. But later on, you know, you pick up two or three or four, and, you know, the spirit ultimately will bring you back to the things that you need to know. You'll come to remembrance. Oh, you know, that's when you have your epiphany, okay? All of a sudden, two or three or four major principal ideas or whatever they might be come together and brings you to an understanding of something that was a great mystery to you and you just couldn't figure. And all of a sudden, you have that epiphany, okay? And people, you know, that are studying, if you're not having epiphanies, you're not really studying. You know, every once in a while, you should have an epiphany. Something should click and the light bulb should go on and say, wow, now I understand that. That's an epiphany.
Yes.
And if you're not having epiphanies, then you're not really studying right, or you're not studying the right thing.
Right. I agree. I've had many epiphanies while as a member of NLA. In fact, one thing I wanted to ask you is, as far as the Quo Ronto that was released in 2014,
right?
If I'm appearing in any court under whatever statute they have, if I present that to the judge and say all statutes are null and void ever since this was issued to every court in the country.
Right.
And this is your copy.
Right. Yeah, but he's not going to take it serious, but it is a building block for the future, because once we get to a certain point, they'll have to now answer to that. So, let me just say, this has been a very good conversation. I kept it going long because we had so many different things that came up and good things, and I wanted to you know, seize the moment to really expound on these things. But we do need to move on to someone else.
Yes, I know. I'm very glad statement? We have this conversation, John. I've been mulling these ideas over my head for a long time. I'm glad we talked. Okay, so I think we ought to move on.
Okay. Hey, and come back again on the mic. Don't leave.
Beautiful. Thanks a lot.
Say, John. Right,
next call. Thank you.
John.
Yes.
Brent is here now.
Okay, Brent, how you doing? Can you pick up the mic? I don't see him on the line. Do you see him? Is he unmuted?
I'm going over and look again.
And you rush me off for nothing.
No, we got a lot of callers in here. So look for Brent. Brent, if you, once we get on
the mic. I just don't hear
okay, there
him.
You go. Are you in as a moderator or no?
No, I'm here.
Well, I can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's do two things. I want to give you the mic for a short period because we got a lot of callers in there, but I want you to give you some time. But also, there was a question earlier concerning the jury, Robert was updating us on the jury out west there and in Nevada and what was going on in that case, I mean. And he mentioned that, I think he said that the judge, I don't know how this came about, whether the judge said to the jury they can ask questions or whatever, but the jury started to ask questions. And I'm not sure, Robert, who were they asking the questions to?
They decided just before the trial started that the jury was going to have the permission to ask questions through the trial, and they can ask questions of the judge, questions of the prosecution, and of the defense.
I like them.
So that would be while the court case is going on, they can ask questions. Was that the idea?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Have you ever heard? What do you think of that? I never even thought of a thought like that. I don't even know how to respond to that.
Well, it's a common thing, and it's in some states now. The ones I'm familiar with, the jury can ask questions with the agreement of both parties. If both parties are represented by counsel, then the jury can ask questions if they both agree that that's okay. But the lawyers that I've talked to, it's brand new, the lawyers that I've talked to that have experienced this, one of them was, he was on the committee in his state that formulated the rule that allowed that, and he said they had read all sorts of studies, the committee did, that pros and cons, and they all thought it was a good idea, all these trial lawyers. He told me, though, and he was for it, he voted for it, and that's why it's part of, in his state, part of what they do. But he's been in trials where it's happened, and he said that he wishes he hadn't voted for it, because when the jurors ask questions, and then the judge is supposed to answer them or the witness that's on the stand, and they get frustrated, the jurors do, and then they get fighting mad, and then they get upset, and then they get emotional. And once all those things happen, of course, nobody hears anything. And if they hear it, they don't understand it. Well, that's what he told me. That's not to say that that's everybody else's experience. And this particular trial out in Las Vegas, it may be a good thing. I don't know.
I agree. That particular trial in Las Vegas might be a good thing because of what's going on.
We need to let it shake out.
But let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Is there anything in the history of the jury that you're familiar or aware of that with that kind of thing?
Well,
anything in history that would support that?
No, not in modern times. When I say modern times, I mean, of course, since our country has been up and running, but in more ancient times before the Norman invasion, before Magna Carta, way back during the times of Edward the Confessor and before that, jurors did ask questions, and the jurors were involved, and there wasn't the rules of evidence weren't in writing. In fact, of course, most of them couldn't read or write anyway, including the... go ahead.
Define that as inquisitors?
As what?
As inquisitors, you know? Instead of...
I see what you're saying. Well, yeah, the word, you make a point. The word inquisitor, inquisition, is Latin. It just means questioner or questions. But with the law of the city, the civil law, the word inquisitor takes on a much uglier meaning. And
yeah, well, look at it. My
soft
point
way of saying we're going to torture you. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, my point is when we think about this, okay, if a judge comes in and the court case goes on and the judge asking questions, I mean, that just doesn't work. That's an inquisition, okay? And and we're not going to, the trial's never going to reveal the truth or the facts or anything. If the jury comes in, which is the king's bench, and they are the tribunal, and they start asking questions, I think the same results can happen. Because, again, they're not familiar with a lot of things of what's really going on in the sense of what the prosecutor would know, because they've done their homework, their investigation, brought all the evidence together, maybe the sheriff or the coroner or the prosecutor or whatever. You see, those people, of course, and then they're producing their questions in order, and then you got, of course, the defense on the other side to work the other side of that. When you have questions going on from a jury, which, again, is the tribunal, I don't see that it could benefit in any way. You know, this is my logical conclusion. I don't know.
That was,
I haven't thought this out.
Well, that was the conclusion of this lawyer I talked to. So, you're not
well, what about, I'm sorry, Brent. What about when the judge says, what about when the judge won't let the defendant use a piece of the Constitution? Then the jury can say, what part of the Constitution did you want to, and the defendant now gets a chance to talk about what the judge told him he couldn't talk about.
Yeah.
Well, again, that's why it might work out good in Nevada, but I don't know about anyplace else.
Yeah, it might. And there's so much lawlessness going on.
Well, first
maybe,
of all, the judges are controlling the juries. They're telling them you're going to rule on the law as I give it to you and blah, blah, blah. And so as far as I can see, it only empowers the jury more because, you know, a lot of times the jury leaves frustrated because of the prosecutor and the judge.
Right.
If they could actually get up there and ask a question, sometimes the question they want never gets – nobody asks it. And so they go through the whole case with that one thing never settled because it was never said.
Well, that's what this lawyer said when he was on the committee and they were considering this, trying to study it out. He said, boy, I was for it from the jump. I wanted this. And he'd been a trial lawyer at that point for 35 years. He'd been a trial lawyer a long time. He understood it. That's why he was on the committee. But I think we ought to give it time. I think we ought. I hope we can. I want to see what happens. Because the truth is, these are the fellows that are...
Yeah, go ahead, Brent. These are the fellows.
No, I'm just going to say that the jury is the court, of last resort, and our law says that whatever they decide, as a matter of fact, is not to be reconsidered except according to the rules of the common law. It says that right in the Constitution itself. So we don't want to hamper them. They are the supreme court of last resort, as a matter of fact.
Well, first of all, Gerard, we're bleeding over through you. I don't know if your speakers are too loud, pointing towards your microphone or what, but something. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, Brent, but logically, when I think this out and just use the idea, of what we know for, concerning a court that runs like an inquisition where the judge asks all the questions, because remember, the trial jury is the judge. And maybe at some point at the end of the case, maybe they can submit some questions to individuals. And I don't know that there could be a way to do it that would – I would think they should be submitted and read by an individual other than the juror. That would be my thinking. And maybe at the end of the case, just to clear up certain things or certain facts, that they want clarity, okay, may be the key thing. Again, I'm just guessing here. I have no idea. To me, it seems, my logic seems to say this is a major problem and it's just going to be nothing but havoc in a courtroom. It's just going to cause problems and confusion.
Yeah,
I can see where an attorney wouldn't like it. Look, you got a client who's a defendant, and you don't want him to talk because he's a dumbbell maybe. Or, you know what I'm saying? And so the jury sits there and asks him a question. Can his attorney answer for him?
Say it again. I didn't catch it.
I can see where an attorney would not like it because he has a client that he doesn't want talking because he doesn't think he's going to do himself any good. And then the jury asks him a question. Now, can the attorney answer for his client?
No, but he could object if it causes confusion.
Yes.
But again, I think it's a major problem.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem if the guy's not a good speaker and the jury asks him a question, and he's over there flubbing and he can't answer it. It doesn't look good.
Well, just with the fact that they haven't done the investigation to really go out there to bring the case. Look, the jury is there to listen, okay? You have a one side that's there to bring the charges up and do all the investigation and bring the evidence together and lay it out. You have the other side that's there to rebut it all and deny it and lay out the fact that these facts are wrong or conclusions are in error or the evidence is tainted or whatever the position may be. A trial jury, in my opinion, is there just to listen. That's it. Now, you know, for advice on what they can do and what they can't do, and a well-informed jury needs to understand they have the power to, decide what the law is, and so they got power of nullification. They got the power of mercy. You know, people do things sometimes, and you might say to yourself, wow, you know, if I was in that position, I don't know that there's anything else I could do. And maybe something terrible happened by it. You know, restitution still needs to be met, but things have to be considered, you know. There has to be mercy considered. There has to be, first of all, don't bring up a statute unless it's a court case that permits statutes to be brought up. For instance, if you have an individual that's been given certain authorities, an elected or appointed person or even a bureaucrat, and they have certain authorities and they abuse that authority. You know, statutes have been written up to these people who are acting under the color of law. And the statute might say, well, 2 years in jail if you do that. Now, of course, the jury can judge the law and say, 2 years in jail is ridiculous. Well, 2 years in jail isn't enough. I don't know. Whatever it is that they want to do, they could discuss that. But the point is, I don't see the jury as anything more than actually, you know, look, they're going to decide innocence or guilt. They're there to listen and consider, ponder, discuss, and conclude.
Well, they can ask the judge questions of the law,
the judge can't give that information.
Well, and the prosecutor. I mean, the juries are not lawyers, and if they have a question of
that's
law, they
why. That's why they needed. That's why we're creating the administrations. Those who are there to instruct and answer questions of the juror. You know, if they want to ask a judge questions, I think there's got to be someone from, one of the people has to be there to consider the fact of what the judge is saying, and maybe even, because the judge is going to be looked at as having the correct answer, okay? But if you have an administration, right, but again, what is the law? What is the question, okay? If they're looking at statutes, today we have judges who will say statutes are law, and they'll instruct statutorily. So that's a problem, of course. It's a very fine line before you start to taint the jury. And I don't know that there's a jury out there that hasn't been tainted. Maybe they came up with the right answers anyway, but they've been tainted. Every jury out there has been tainted.
Well, that's a point I wanted to bring up, is the fact that they do taint the juries and they don't let them rule on the law. And this judge is very unpopular right now for all the crap that she pulled. And I could see them letting the jury ask questions because it gives her some credibility. She goes, well, the jury could have asked, right? So it takes the heat off of her now because she's had her fingers in the case the whole time. And I don't know if New Hampshire passed a law that they have to inform the jury that they can rule on the law as well as the facts. New Hampshire just passed that law last year.
Well, did they put in it the nullification powers? I mean,
yes,
that's
what I'm talking about, nullification, that they can rule on the law whether they think it's being misapplied or they agree with it. New Hampshire passed that law that they have to tell the jury that.
Well, look, a jury is orientated, okay? You know, they come in and they have to get a basic, you know, understanding of what it is they're doing, the importance of it, what their powers are, what their authority is, the principles that they need to have. And again, we teach a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and the fact that, you know, we're here to restore, not to punish. I mean, to some degree, look, at restoring usually is a punishment because someone has to pay for that restoration, don't they? So restoring is the key to any court case, in my opinion. Is to restore. So if we, I know, and we're working on this, by the way, for everyone to know this, we're putting together an orientation for jurors. And so that this will be taught to the administrators so that we have well-informed jurors that are not tied down or strapped down by anybody's mind but the mind of God, because that is the key. They are there, and they need to understand it, that they are on the king's bench. They are the tribunal of the king. Justice, you know, and so we can teach that jury, okay, in a one-day session, all the basic principles and ideas necessary in order to go forward, because it's not a really deep education. It's really about listening, getting the facts, and ruling on the facts, because that's what it's all about. Just give me the facts. That's all I need. And we all have that ability to really take the facts and listen and kind of pick up on the BS and the lies and stuff. If we're just listening, if both sides are making it, we're just listening. It takes on. And, you know, the fact that you got 12 people there, for that one or two individuals that for some reason maybe not paying attention or don't have that ability to see the this or that, okay, you got the other 10 there or 11, you know, that they're going to be chewing things up with, and they're going to come up to that decision and make the right decision, in my opinion, and give a good conclusion. And look, it only takes one jurist to say, I don't agree with the rest of you, I'm sorry. And at some point, then they got to come in and just to quit. And there it is, you know. That's our system. It's the greatest system going, and it's very simple, and it's just sticking to the facts. By the way, am I still here? Because I see some problems on my computer. Server connection error?
You faded out once or twice, but yeah, you're still here.
Yeah. All right. I'm having some kind of a server connection error. But all right, anyway, that's my thoughts on it. And we can make it right. The people can do it.
You gotta unmute Terry next, John. I don't know what happened.
You're gonna have to take my board. I can't. I got a problem on my computer.
You gotta unmute Terry next, John. I don't know what happened.
You're gonna have to take my board. I can't.
Unmuted.
Oh, hi. This is Terry from Colorado. I had two things. One, a bill of attainder is legislation punishment, so it's an act of the legislature. A ticket is a summons, not a bill of attainder. A summons is there to tell you when to come to court to argue your case. And so I think this basic idea that tickets or bills of attainder is starting off on the wrong foot.
Brett,
and then I have another question. Once you digest that one.
Yeah, Bill. Not Bill. Brent, what do you think about that?
Brent,
we were looking at the bill of attainder. I'm going to have to reboot. I got a lot of problems on my side.
Yeah, Bill. Not Bill. Brent, what do you think about that? We were looking at the bill of attainder. I'm going to have to reboot. I got a lot of problems on my side.
Murphy,
yeah, I'm hearing you, John, but you're echoing.
Murphy, come on.
Are you gone?
Yeah, I'm hearing you, John.
Yeah,
Murphy.
Are you gone? Well, the bill of. Can you hear me?
Is someone with bleeding from Gerard? Look at the board and find out who's bleeding from.
Yeah,
Jan.
Can you hear me? Can you
crazy?
There's someone with bleeding through.
Gerard, look at the board and find it. Yeah, Jan. I mean, it's crazy. There was a couple people bleeding through. Try it now. I just muted them.
Well,
right.
You're not echoing
now.
Those
administrators, if you're not talking, mute yourself so we don't bleed through you, too. But, yeah, it was like talking to 60 people at a time or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, John, am I coming through?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Oh, what? I didn't catch all of it. I heard you say bill of attainder, but you were somebody said it was being confused with something that some court document or something. But the bill
right.
of attainder is
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, earlier on we had a conversation and somebody brought up this bill of attainder and we looked for the meaning of it. And and ultimately it's something that I never really deeply looked into. And of course it's in the Constitution concerning a bill of attainder. And basically it comes up defined in Black's Dictionary and a more simplified or more accurate, which is what Black's is saying anyway, the definition is a legislative act that singles out an individual or a group for punishment without a trial, okay?
Yeah, that's it.
Which,
that's it.
Okay, so that being the case, if you were to get a summons, you know, if you were to get a code violation is what you're getting, and then you're being summoned to court for that code violation, that would be a bill of attainder, wouldn't it?
Well, it... yeah, it'd be pretty close. I see what you're saying, but it's not a legislative act. It's not
well,
an act
it's an act of code writers who claim to be legislators, who claim to be writing statutes, who claim to be writing punishments
no,
for those
yeah.
statutes.
No, you're be right. That's why I say. That's why I say it's pretty close, and they're claiming to be legislators when they write, they promulgate those regulatory rules. But
either they're a group of people, okay, making believe there's something that they're not, and people are believing them like legislators, and they're breaking the law for that, or they are legislators and breaking the law that the Constitution clearly forbids them from doing.
Yeah,
either
no, that
way,
makes
it's
yeah,
a bill
that
of attainder.
But I would say that the courts would say no, that has to be the legislature, and there's three branches of government here, and it's not the legislature, so it's not a bill of attainder. Now, they may say it's an executive order, but that's what all bureaucratic acts are. They're really executive orders, all the regulations.
Right, but most of these things are written down on a town level and even on the state level,
yeah.
too, but on
yeah.
a town
yeah.
level and
yeah.
or the county, shall I say the county, really, maybe, because they have, here they have what's called legislators, and I met one of them and was talking with them, and they say they really don't legislate, and I say, I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah.
But in
yeah.
any event, you know, but in any event, they do legislate these code violations, these statutes, and they put these things together, and then they're executed in the courts, you know, the town courts, the village courts, and the city courts, and all of that is acting under the color of law. All of that is violating your unable right of due process, and of course, they're making believe that they are legislators, and it has some power and some authority, so it is a bill of attainder.
Yeah, I understand.
And I think in a federal court, taking that town court, shall I say the judge and the prosecutor, into a federal court for cause, was a violation against the constitutional, constitutional violation, or really saying an unalienable right protected by the Constitution,
right.
You're bringing that into a federal court, and I think it's a powerful case that they can't walk away. And there's no reason for them, I mean, they'd like to save the judge and everything else, but... you know, why are they going to put their neck on line and put themselves at risk to rule against what is, you know, obvious in their court? I think it's one right off.
I want to add something here. V&T law, vehicle and traffic law, is not done by the counties. It's done at the state level, and it is
state
done
level.
By the legislature.
You're right.
It's a state level thing, and when I was on the town board and we passed an ordinance or a law, they told us that under the home rule law, it has the same force and effect as if the New York State legislature passed it, and we have to send it up to the State Department and register it, and it became a law as much as if the legislature had passed it. So that's another wrinkle here, you know.
But that's interesting, yeah. Again, it brings us right back to the authority and the approval of the legislator who is acting against the Constitution in Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 3. Which we read a little earlier, that says that ultimately no bill of attainder or ex post facto law, post facto law, will be passed.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Will not
yeah,
be passed. Will be passed. You can't pass that.
Yeah.
So you can't pass anything that tries to control my behavior.
John, and there's no question, too, that these local bodies, these city councils and village trustees, all these kind of, they target certain people. I've seen that happen. And when a community is small, they want to stop somebody from doing something, and they'll target them.
Yes.
And that's exactly what the Bill of Attainder is all about, targeting certain individuals for a certain class of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're doing, exactly. And they've taken it to, look, they've taken it to the point of RICO. Because they've taken this to all kinds of violations and rules. They make money all day long on this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if they wasn't making this kind of money, there would be no such thing as a village court or a town court or a city court. Well, a city court maybe, but there'd be no such thing as a village or town court.
Uh-huh.
And they wouldn't have all these code enforcers, which we call local police, running around mugging people on the side of the road.
Uh-huh. Well, that's fact. And these are the kind of things, the application, the evil empire has they're really clever and crafty over the centuries. They get better at finding ways to make it look like they're not violating the law. And this is a classic example. And maybe those arguments have been brought up in court. I don't know. I haven't looked. Maybe it's something that people have already thought of. But if they haven't, it's still something that could be brought up.
I don't think any bar lawyer would really bring anything like this up because I think they'd be beat down real quick. You know?
Well, it's getting worse, that's for sure. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
But those are the kind of things. That's the application of the law, though, that needs to be stressed. That it's illegal to do things that if it's illegal to do to achieve a certain result in a lawful manner or an unlawful manner. It's also illegal to achieve that same unlawful result in a lawful way. And the law has always said that. But there's a million ways. The creativity of the twisted mind of man is it's without limit when it comes to ways of making things look like they're not unlawful. And this it maybe is another good example. But certainly the question comes is, what is legislation? You made the point, which is really true, the rest of the world, legislation may come from a dictator. It may come from a bureaucrat. It may come from just an individual or a combination of persons, a council or something that expresses a single will. And that's legislation. I mean, they're making law. They're deciding what statutes ought to be enforced and what codes and things like that. So we need to be alert to those kind of things. And often, if it's targeting the person to punish him by that act, and that's what I've seen this happen from these local little juror entities, water districts, towns, cities, councils, local boards, all that kind of stuff. If they're trying to punish a certain fella, and if they have been incorporated, that juror entity, the county, the city, the village, if they've been incorporated by the sovereign, the state government, or the federal government even, but the state government, then like I say, there's only two cities in the United States that have been chartered by an act of Congress. And both of them have been utter failures. One of them is Washington, D.C., chartered by an act of Congress. And there's not a rottener, more dangerous place in the world to live than or be than Washington, D.C. And the other place that was chartered by an act of Congress was Shawneetown. Shawneetown, Illinois. And Shawneetown's a miserable failure, too, and that's where they put the National Bank. And they thought that'd become the center of the universe, and at that time, Chicago didn't amount to anything. It was just a village on the mudflats of Lake Michigan. And they thought that Shawneetown would be the hub of the universe for the western United States. It's on the Ohio River between Kentucky and Illinois. And they put the National Bank there. They put the land office, their federal land office, and Shawneetown never mounted anything. I think it doesn't have 1,500 people living in it now, and it's always had a reputation for being just a dangerous place, even though it was so small. So, but the rest of these cities and towns around the country have been chartered by the states. If they are chartered, that means they're corporations, they're juror entities of the state government, creatures of state government. And if they're doing these kind of things, which we know they are, it's just human nature. People want to get people back. I was in a place in Texas not long ago. There was some family members had lived there, grown up there, as a matter of fact. and a little tiny town of about 200 people. And it's never been incorporated in any way, and there was a move on. We went to the house where this family member had grown up as a boy and wanted to see it. He was getting older, and he wanted to see it, and we went and saw it, and it's been about 15, 20 years ago, I guess now. Time flies. But the lady that lived in the house was, she was a nuisance, a public nuisance to the whole town, and they were trying to get incorporated by the state government so that they could pass a code and enforce it against her. That's exactly what, and I liked her. She was a nice lady, but she was kind of unusual and did the unusual things that they didn't like. But that's just one example. They saw her, everybody in town hated her, and they were going to fix her wagon. And they were going to, but they had to get incorporated first from the state government, from the state legislature of Texas to get the job done, because that gave them power to hire a policeman or some kind of enforcer to do those things. That's a bill of attainder. If they'd have done it, they never got the job done. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, again, there are two reasons for these people to do this. One, like you say, is to go after a particular individual or group, and the other is money, in my opinion. And and you know, we were looking at that a little earlier concerning the fact of the money, and you know, it really ends up to be RICO. From my perspective, anyway, because again, they make a huge amount of money, and we know that a lot of this money it seems to go in, from what we're hearing and understanding, it seems to go into the benefit of the players of the town or the players in the village, in the sense of working towards certain things in their retirement and stuff, and it's just pretty sick, in my opinion. But let me do this, Terry. You got a lot of noise coming through here, so I'm muting you until we come back to you. In a second. I don't know who unmuted you, but you're muted. We got to watch that, because when we get all this interference, you know, whoever's on the line, maybe you got your speakers too loud or something, and it's hitting your microphone.
She just put her headset on, so that won't happen.
Yeah, but there was big humming when she was unmuted. We'll unmute her in a second. Anyway, okay. What we're going to do, I think, Brent, is it's kind of late, so we're going to just continue with the Q&A. And feel free to pipe in a thought or an idea or a correction as we go along, you know, as Gerard or I do, so, you know.
Okay.
And then next week we'll move back to your lessons, just because it's so late, and we do have people that have been waiting in the queue, so we want to go forward, all right?
I want people to talk too, so go ahead.
Okay, so we're going to go back to Terry now. I think, Terry, you got the mic. I just unmuted you. Go right ahead. You hear that noise in the background, by the way, Gerard?
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, go right ahead, Terry.
Can you hear me all right?
Go right ahead, Terry.
Let me stand something real quick. I need to change my sound. I need to change my sound system. Okay. There we go. The Bouvier's Law, which is the only one I have at the moment, says a bill of attainder is legislation, punishment, and act of the legislature by which one or more persons are declared to be attainted and their property confiscated. I don't think that applies. I know that you're extending it to that, but I don't think statutes are like that. They're laws that say, hey, if we're going to live in this city, you need to, you know, there's a speed limit on this road. You need to not violate the speed limit. That's not a bill of attainder because it's not directed at a single person.
Right, but
I have after that's my opinion, which doesn't mean a whole lot.
Comment.
How and when might we hear the reply?
Maybe I'm not getting through. Can you hear me, Terry?
Please do.
Yeah. But let me just comment on that before you move on to the next idea. I
understand. Yes, I can.
Okay, maybe there's just a... what do you call it, delay. But anyway, I understand the idea of a town or some place that might want to put a particular speed limit up there, and people should obey it. I mean, what kind of person would be driving down the street and just ignore the red light and drive right through? You might be killed. You might kill someone else. I mean, that's logical. And I think if we teach our children young, you know, we need to get back to the morals. And if we teach our children young, they'll be good people and they'll do the right thing. Most people will. Every once in a while, some people won't, okay? So the bottom line is if someone injures somebody, because they didn't follow the rule of logic that 30 miles an hour was there and they shouldn't be doing it. And, you know, you shouldn't be running 80 miles an hour and passing red lights because maybe there's a school there or maybe it's a village, people crossing, and so on. You know, I think basically everyone is going to obey that. You don't need to be doing code violations. Just when someone does something wrong, everyone else is going to know about it, and you're going to learn from other people's mistakes or your own. And you're going to pay for it through by restoring the individual that you've injured. Now, this was proven ultimately by an experiment was done. I forget where it was. Gerard, you might know some of the details. More than
a couple places, but England was the main one.
So they took the
traffic lights off?
Right. They told the townspeople that they were going to turn off all the traffic lights and just let people drive, okay, and see what happens. And what they found was a moving situation of more fluid motion of the traffic and the people crossing the streets. People stopped, they yielded to each other, and they kept moving. And also it became much more accident-free. As a matter of fact, when they finished with the experiment, the people in the town said, don't bring the lights back. We like it this way. Because people would comment something like, well, it would take me 15 or 20 minutes to go from this point to that point to get to work. And now with this thing that's going to my time is in hand. Because people yield to the pedestrians. They also found that there was less accidents, automobile accidents hitting people. And the main reason for that is theorized, and probably is the case, was the fact that people weren't watching the red light anymore. They were watching the people and the cars and the motions and becoming part of that fluid movement through the town. And so, you know how you sit at a red light, and I find myself often doing this. I'm looking up at that red light, and I'm getting ready on the gas, and I'm going to hit the gas, and I'm not thinking about the person to my right that's trying to make the finish on that red light, on the green light that they have crossing, and you almost hit somebody because, again, you're not watching the people, you're watching the light. So you're not watching the traffic, you're watching the light. And then when the light changes, you quickly try to get that move to get going, and you don't have the time to evaluate it. So it all makes sense that, you know, really these code violations, these lights and all these rules just shouldn't be. But, of course, there should be speed limits and people should obey them. And I think generally they will. You know? I drive differently at 3 o'clock in the morning on town roads than I do at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. My next question is how...
By the way, there must be a big delay. But.
Absolutely. How and when might we hear the reply of the paper? I'm sorry. How and when might we hear the reply of the paper indicting Judge Kahn, and what do you think will happen?
Okay. Well, look, we had no choice but to indict. We knew we had to do it. We also had to send a message to the magistrate that is administrating our court case, which he's the next guy we're going after. And if he's got – look, if the guy is smart and understands anything, he's listening in right now, and he's been listening in for quite some time because – and he's not too bright if he isn't doing it. But we are going after him next. Of course, we're not just going to go out and indict him. We're not going to do a paper where he needs to show cause why he hasn't acted and done his administrative duties. Okay, that's what that's what we want to know. Why isn't he doing that? And it was important to go after this guy because, he was trying to close the whole case down. And so it was important to do a writ of error to him, but it had to be enforced because he was committing... look what he's doing, his action. His action is his concealment, removing of papers, covering up on murder, extortion, RICO, the robbing of people's homes and children's. He doesn't want no one to hear about that. He's covering up all those things. That's a huge crime. We couldn't let him get away with that. And it had to be done, and it also is a shot across the bow to the administrator of the courtroom, who is the magistrate, to let him know, we have no problem going after you, too. It's time for you to do your job. Now, we've gone after Sessions at the same time because Sessions has not been doing his duty. We're no longer sending – the next thing Sessions is going to get from us is an order to show cause. That's the next thing he's going to get. We've been letting the president know about this, and I'm wondering if not only what's going on between the president and Sessions now with what he's saying lately may have more to do with what we're doing than we realize, possibly, because the president is under the pressure now, and I do believe he's getting our papers. I don't think anyone would dare prevent the president from getting these papers, and he has shown an interest, you know, through his people to us, that he's very interested in our papers. So I'm sure he told his people, I want to see these papers, and we haven't gone after the president for anything. But we've been informing him through information, and he knows all about our case. He knows everything that we're doing, every paper we filed. He gets a copy of it. He's got it. And all the papers we filed in the past, he's got it. He's got our website. Who knows? Maybe he's sitting and listening, you know. But, you know, he's hitting down a little hard on Sessions right now. I think it's time for Sessions to leave because he's not doing the right thing. And I think this president, who is informed on what we're doing, I think that he's realizing and seeing that, look, I got to stand up for justice, too. I can't just let this go because I become guilty as Sessions does. So we're going to do a show cause then, but Sessions may not be there for much longer. So we'll see what happens. Did I answer your question, or am I a little short on anything? Terry? Jen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Is Terry talking?
Not that I can see or hear. She's unmuted.
Yeah. I hear a little something, but it's so...
Yes, I yield. I yield. I had my mic muted.
Got that, Tuffy. Okay. Thank you. We'll go to the next caller. Okay? It looks like it might be California Fred. Let's go to
Thank
the next
you.
Caller. Thank you. Thank you. Well, Terry went up. Let's try California
muted.
Fred again.
You may now ask your question.
I don't know what
Holy
that is.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I'm trying to move to California, Fred. Let me try again. Okay. Next question. Fred,
Hello?
Go right ahead. You got the mic.
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Excellent. I turned down my speakers and I have the volume on low on my mic. I had a question when you brought up that bill of attainder. I started thinking about the common class of people in America is the citizen. And it's my understanding that the Congress always declares a state of emergency. And somehow that state of emergency removes the common law and due process and puts us under some form of military tribunal in the courts. I've heard this before,
right.
But I believe that this might be grounds for a detain or whatever you call it, a bill of attainder.
What might be grounds for a bill of attainder? This emergency situation?
Yeah, Congress
no.
gets together.
No.
Okay, let's continue the emergency and deprive the people of their Article III courts that they authorized. Where do they
well,
get their authority?
Look at no. The only thing that they have is look. It talks about, and I have to go look it up. But it talks about the habeas corpus. Okay, that's the only part of what you may be, you know, really talking about. Concerning that during a situation that maybe it's impossible. Look, in one county here or another county there, let's say there was a national emergency. That's no reason to stop having common law courts. That's no reason to stop habeas corpus, which means you're stopping due process. It just isn't a reason. Now, obviously, if there's conflict in that particular county, and again, that's why we bring it back to the sheriff, who's really in charge of this whole thing during a national emergency. Really, it's the sheriff that needs to make sure that the law continues within the county. Okay, that's his job. It's his duty. And so obviously if there's firing in the streets and stuff and someone does get arrested during that time period and they're sitting in jail and they can't get the due process because it needs to be pretty quick, but they can't get it because there's shooting in the streets and things going on and so on and so forth. And maybe they're taking people who are, you know, terrorizing people and putting them in jail and there's riots going on and stuff.
John,
before
you carry on with the long version, please understand.
Yeah, I'm just saying the logical part of it, though. But okay, go ahead.
Okay, because here's where I believe it stems from, is they had a banking holiday, and they brought in the Federal Reserve. The next thing you know is America had declared bankruptcy as a nation. The bankruptcy lasts for 75 years. And that's where they came up with the state of emergency.
But it's all fraud, right?
Well, we both know it's fraud. The thing is that during the Clinton administration, we came out of bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And that should have put us back on solid ground.
Why would it? They've had us there for 75 years. It benefits them, and they're going to continue to let it benefit them and their agenda and their positioning that they think they're going to be able to do in the next months or years or so. And of course, they're not going to go backwards. Look, once the government takes more power, it never gives it back. Even if it says, oh, we only need it for a little while, you'll never get it back. You have to take it back from them. And that's where we're at. And that's why National Liberty Alliance is doing what it's doing and building these administrations and also, you know, getting the people to respond on a local level and building committees of safety and the people to get up. Why? To take all this stuff back, because it's the only way it's going to happen. And if we don't do that, I don't care what President Trump does. I don't care what successes he has. And when he leaves office, everything could be gold. But it's only going to go back to where it was because the hearts of men are desperately wicked and evil. Who could know it? And these people are wicked. The hearts of men are full of darkness. These people are wicked people. And they exercise their dark hearts, and they want to build their dark cities. And they seem to be within reason very patient to some degree, but this is a new generation of elites. You know, their fathers and grandfathers were different people. They were more rugged than these people are, and more maybe patient than these people are. They suffer with the same problems that we suffer with, you know, impatience and so on. But in any event, that's going to be their downfall. Because they're going to act on what their fathers taught them to do at this part in time, but they don't understand they're unable to see the signs that it's not going to work anymore. In my mind, it is clear that they cannot accomplish the taking over the world, at least not in this time, at this point in time. They can't do it. And if they're going to try to do it, it's going to take them another 30, 40, 50 years. And they got to wait to get rid of this president and bring things back under another state of mind. And this is what the fake news is really trying to do, is to keep the people suppressed and to try to get rid of this president. And it's too late for them to put a bullet in his head. That's what they'd love to do, is to get rid of this president. But it's too late for them to do that. And they don't know what to do. And they are suffering, a thousand cuts? What do you call it? What do you say, Gerard, that saying?
Death of a thousand cuts.
They are suffering that. And you know what? I believe in my heart, I really do believe that we are going to be successful. And when it's going to be and when it's going to happen, it's another question. If only the people would wake up and we get that critical mass, it could happen right now. But it's going to take some more time, and it's going to take that critical mass. That's what it's going to take.
I want to bring something up if I can.
That or empowerment in this court right now through the president pressing the attorney general to send down U.S. attorneys to prosecute these people for all of these charges we're bringing up. If that happens, that will cause critical mass.
Mr. Durash, I want to say one more thing about Mr. Sessions. Now, if you have been following the White House webpage, you will see that President Trump just appointed another 11 prosecutors. And he's still trying to get the leftovers from the Democrats out. The Democrats have been dragging their heels. They're obstructionists. He hasn't even got his full cabinet in yet.
Mm-hmm.
I would give Mr. Sessions a little bit of slack. He's dealing with Obama prosecutors. Look
I don't see. I don't see anything special in Sessions. I see really him being status quo. That's what I see. And let me tell you something. I really don't care. Look it. Here's the bottom line on this. Murder is murder. Stealing is stealing. No matter what you, whatever crime, Gerard, you're coming in, we're repeating through you. I don't know if there's something you can do with your speakers or put on a headset or something.
I agree with you. I would agree with you about his
stand on justice. If you're in the court, there is no politics, there is no favors, there's nothing. You stand on the court, you stand on the principles of the court, you stand and you exercise and execute, or you're going to be cursed for eternity, in my opinion, the law of the king. Okay? If you're going to take the law of the king and go up against that, you're going up against God. And that's a personal thing between him and God now. He's got to deal with that. All these people, that's why God cursed the lawyers, because these people, you know, generally speaking, not all of them, of course, but generally they're immoral. They're always twisting the law. They're never exercising and executing the true law, which God commands us to do. And we have to let our jurists know these, and this is why the people have to administrate, and this is why we all have to take vows of honor, justice, and mercy, and we all have to police each other to make sure we don't break those things, and we'll get that guy who will come in and try to get power out of this and be unjust, and we have to get rid of that guy, whoever he is or she is, okay? But we can't – anybody that's in the justice game – can't afford to tinker around with justice. You apply what it is. And if Mr. Sessions can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. He doesn't belong there because a just man will not compromise that. He will go to the grave on it. Get rid of him.
Well, maybe we can find a prosecutor and advise Mr. Trump to appoint this gentleman.
Yeah.
Well, we are, giving – we've advised the president on one or two occasions. We've informed the president on everything we've done for many months, 10 months now, before he even became president. And he's getting it. He's a smart guy. And he doesn't need to go to someone else to understand. He'll figure this out on his own. Of course, we go to each other for understanding. We build off each other. You know, we edify off each other, and we build up off of each other. And he does the same thing. But he's good at it, and I think he understands.
One of his sisters is a judge.
Right, but he's got to hear.
One of Trump's sisters is a judge.
What Mr. Trump has to hear is the words of God. He has to hear the words of the United States Supreme Court. He has to hear the words of the founding fathers and the principles. He's got to hear the words of the Constitution. And this is what we are giving him. We are giving him those words. And sometimes it takes a while before we respond to those things and actually make the big changes in our life that we've had positions on because we have to have that special experience. What did we call it earlier? I can't think of it. Anyway, look, he's got to change his mind and his thinking in certain areas. Anybody who doesn't know these things, then they need to have their minds changed on their positionings and thinking, because when you listen to the words of liberty, you listen to the words of righteousness, ultimately from the Bible through God and even through our founding fathers and people who have given a lot of thought and consideration of what justice is and commentary on it, and you start listening to those people, your whole perception of how you think and respond to these things changes 180 degrees in almost everything, it seems. I mean, you know, 20 years ago or so, if you would have talked about getting rid of traffic lights, I would think you're crazy, you know. Now, I see it. I know it works. I know it works. All these towns, I look at my town, you know, every one of these corners should have a pedestrian crosswalk. It should be a little thing, yield to pedestrians, and you get rid of everything else. That's what they should have. Instead, they got three or four lights throughout the town, and there's lots of streets you can't cross on, and there's problems, and people have been hit. you know, and they haven't fixed these problems, you know. But, anyway.
Hey, John, have you ever heard of a box X?
A box X. I'm not sure that
yes.
I heard that.
Okay. A box X is where all lights turn red and you can't make a right turn on a red light. And pedestrians only can enter the intersection. And it's a box X.
Well, you know what? The only place that works, in my opinion, is a very congested area like New York City. I don't think you
or
can get
San
rid of lights.
Or San Francisco or Auckland,
yeah, exactly.
New Zealand.
Exactly. Any big city. I agree. Any big city, I don't think you can get rid of lights. And I don't think you should allow, in New York City, you can't make a right on a red because there's, you know, that's a problem. And so those areas, it's clear you can't do that. But generally speaking, almost every place else you can.
You should have seen the film I saw in Africa. It was crazy. I don't know how they do it. It was so fast and so crazy, and nobody was hitting anybody. I couldn't believe it.
At 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're driving, and you come up into a red light, whether it's in the middle of the town or whatever, it doesn't matter. And you got your windows open, and you hear the crickets, you know, just singing along. And there's not a light moving anywhere. There's not a soul on the streets. Are you going to sit there and wait? Because I don't.
Well, we're going to arrest you. You just had a public confession of that.
I can,
expo
yes,
facto.
I confess. This
bill of attainder and ex post facto law. We got you.
I've been dying to get back into traffic court. I hope they send me a ticket.
Anyway, I threw in your box. John, I threw in your box a definition of bills of attainder that, thanks to Mayor Esposito, and you should read it. It really throws more light on it, but I still think that there's an argument there because the legislators do make the law. I don't want to read it now. I think we should read it in private and then discuss it amongst ourselves and then maybe bring it back because we've already beat it to death. But it's a better explanation than what was in Black's Law because it talks about, you know, that it's for laws where people are supposed to be guilty of high offenses such as treason and felony, blah, blah, blah. But just read it because I think it really adds a little more than we thought that it meant, okay?
Well, yeah, and just bear in mind on the big things like treason and stuff, hey, little things are just part of the whole system also. So when you apply a logic here, the logic flows down there, and then it becomes a problem. But, you know, again, you know, what I'm trying to say is we can't isolate it just for treason and things.
Well,
like, but I haven't
says,
read stuff, so I don't know.
What it says is that if a act inflicts a milder degree of punishment than death, it is called a bill of pains and penalty. In such cases, the legislator assumes the judicial magistracy pronouncing upon the guilt of the party without any of the common forms and guards
well,
of trial.
Well, that makes
blah,
it
blah,
unconstitutional
blah, blah.
Right there, right?
So, yeah, look, we got to read this and discuss it because it adds a lot of more to the soup. And the other thing I wanted to say is, look, there was
Yeah, but
all,
the bottom line on that, for simplicity reasons, the bottom lines on that, whether it's the crime of subversion or it's the crime of jaywalking, it's all irrelevant. In other words, you can't apply these codes, these statutes on people, period.
Right.
Wouldn't you agree? I mean, anything that violates your right and tries to control your behavior is null and void.
And it kind of gets into that, talking about how it's not to be strictly enforced or whatever, broadly. I don't know. They get into some stuff there. But we'll have to read it and kind of mull over.
There's only two things that control the behavior of people, okay? Ultimately, if you have a godly, if you've been brought up with a godly mind, and you have you want to, you know, exercise the will of God, and therefore you obey through that perspective, okay? On the other hand, if you're brought up godless, but your parents are correcting you, you know, you're taken to the woodshed, or there's a penalty to be paid. You broke the rules, okay? So therein is the way of things. Now, if you you know, do something that they may give you a code violation, but you do it enough times, and let's say there was no code violations in whatever it is you're doing, and then you injure somebody, well, now you're going to get, you know, the whooping, you know, and it's the state that's going to whoop you, not mom and dad, you know. And hopefully if we train our children, and again, here's a promise, train up your children on how they should walk, and when they get older, they will not depart from that. That's a promise from God. That's a fact of on the laws of the way of life, okay? And so if you take that to heart, and if we all take that to heart in a general way, in other words, bring back this kind of correction in school, get rid of this, you know, all this craziness that this political movements have given us, our children are dealt with in a certain way, and you can't say or do certain things, and you can't punish your children corporally. I mean, all these things. If we are correcting our children and we're teaching them what's right and wrong in schools, then we're going to have a better society as these people grow up. And hopefully most of them will be godly, because that will be the most controlled individual, because they're really working to obey the will of God ultimately. And that's the greatest blessing anyone will receive, anybody who's doing that.
Right. And, you know, as far as doing stuff in an emergency and martial law and all this baloney, and there was that group of people that said, oh, we're still under the Liber Code. We got to get rid of the Liber Code because the Constitution has been suspended and blah, blah, blah.
You can't suspend the Constitution. There's no place that talks about suspensions of the Constitution.
Well, look at martial law is designed for when there's bullets in the street. So the guy who's running that.
Wait a second. Hold it. Here's the thing on that, though. Let's think this out a little more. If people were educated to understand that martial law ultimately, you know, removes our unalienable rights and removes the control of our government, which is the Constitution, why do they want to remove the Constitution? Because they want the controls on them removed. And that's their whole thing. People need to understand this. There's no place in our Constitution that the people have said, by the way, if we get to a real big emergency and there's fire in the street, you can shut this whole Constitution down. You can just suspend it. Nowhere does it say that, okay? It talks about potentially suspending the habeas corpus, but ultimately habeas corpus is a statutory process. It doesn't affect the fact that it's the law of the land anyway, and you can never suspend the law of God, okay? Let's go beyond that. And, you know, logic would say, yeah, if there's shooting in the streets outside, you can't run a court case or anything. Then people are going to have to wait till the shooting stops, okay? And counties, you know, this is a big nation. There's a lot of states, a lot of counties. We got 3,143 counties, I think it is, okay? That doesn't mean we have to suspend the law in every county. Of course, they want to do that. They want to bring martial law to the whole thing. The people better wake up.
Hadn't we discussed that martial law is really for when you fight in a country and you're taking over
and you've taken over the country to control
right. And so what happens is when there's crime going on in the street, the commander, the military commander, and we don't, mm-hmm. and that's why we're not supposed to be using the military against the people, because this
that's
we
right.
should not
so there'll
be,
never be martial law in America because there's right. no military permitted.
That's
there shouldn't
right.
be anyway.
And so that military commander will put a bullet in a guy because he deems him a threat, or he'll lock him up in a jail with no jury or anything. But even under the Liber Code, which we don't agree with, it still says in there that they have to give you your constitutional rights if there's no active fighting going on within 40 miles of you or however many miles. So, you know, really, they don't have much excuse for suspending your rights, because it even says there, you know, that unless it's active shooting, like outside the window or whatever, the military has to give, you know, work under those rules of evidence and due process, you know. But, you know, militaries aren't trained to do that. Police officers are. There's a difference between a soldier and a police officer. And that's why they didn't want military in the street, because the military's job is to shoot, kill, and take ground. That's their job.
Break things. Right? Break things.
So, yeah, and break things, exactly. So anyway, but, you know, they don't even follow their own law, because obviously we don't have any active shooting going on anywhere, and they don't give us the Constitution. So I don't know you know, what their rationalization of all that is. Anyway,
well,
I think we'd be...
There's only one way that we can prevent anything like that from ever happening on the soil of America. And it requires knowledge. It requires all the people to know and understand this, and, of course, much more. Look at, as Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. It's an impossibility. You can't be ignorant and actually have liberty. But it's the Amendment 2 which really solves the whole problem. We have to get the people, everybody, back involved in the militia, exercising, their duty in the militia, because it is a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Okay? That's what it is. And it's that simple. And if people understood what that really means, and everybody understood what that really means, and again, now we have to get back into re-educating our children, because our children are so... I'm going to say they're so immoral, they're so ignorant to history, they're ignorant to liberty, they're ignorant to our founding fathers, okay? I talked with my nephew recently and talked with him about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. He's 14 years old. He had no clue who they were. That is sickening. And that's how destroyed our children are.
Yeah, no doubt.
So it's all about knowledge. It's all about the right knowledge, of course. We don't want their knowledge. You know, we want the just knowledge, you know. But anyway.
All right. I think we beat that to death.
You sure did. Freddie, you still there?
Yes, John. I muted out.
Okay. You want a minute or so more before we move on?
No, sir. You've answered my question more than enough.
Okay. I hope I wasn't putting you to sleep there.
But if I was going to say one more thing, it would be this. The LIBOR code can be used by the citizens of the United States against a corporation, because the military is supposed to hold and preserve our property while it's in limbo and controlled by the state during a police action.
But that's if you were going to say one more thing, right?
That's interesting. And this word, police action, I think, started in the Vietnam War when they sent the Marines over there, and they didn't want to declare war.
Yeah,
and
I think you're right.
They
declared
it a police action, remember? And so that's different than a military action. I mean, then they expect them to, no, you can't fire on them until they fire on you and all this other crazy stuff. That's really not akin to a military operation. You know, you got soldiers. You're trying to make them policemen.
I'm very much. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Fred.
There was a general Smedley Butler, I believe it was.
Yep,
he was
Butler,
a Marine.
1937 or 38. Yep.
There was a coup trying to take over the United States of America.
Right.
And he was a Marine, and he put it down.
Well, first of all, he was approached to take the power and the authority, and he accepted it, with the idea and realization to expose it, and took it to Congress. And his speech to the floors of Congress, we have that speech up on our website, by the way. And it's a powerful speech.
Right.
And he exposed the subversion and the conspiracy, and it prevented it from happening.
Don't think for one minute they're not at it again. This time it's Muslims.
You bet. You bet. You bet.
Okay, so, I'm going to mute out because we could talk all night.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Fred. Appreciate it. Let's go to our next caller. I don't know. T, Tom, maybe? 973 area code?
No, you got 3989. Tom's next after this one. You got it ends in 3-8.
I wonder why
that
happened down there. 3-8, yeah, you're right. It's all, that's like 4 or 5 down. What's up with that?
I don't know.
You have him on the top?
No, I got Terry after this one. Who's there? Who did I unmute?
I unmuted 862.
862, that's me. My name is Sidna from New Jersey. And I'm kind of in a real dilemma. I've been fighting mortgage fraud here for since the day I signed my mortgage, at least the past 10 years. And I'm going into sheriff's sale on Wednesday, and I just found out about an affidavit of truth, and I just don't know what to do.
Well, look, if you go on our website, have you been to the website? Obviously,
yes.
You have been, I
yes.
guess? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so
on
I've
our
read
website.
All the books. I know what's going on. It's been in civil court. I have not been allowed a trial. It's they have hoodwinked me left and right, and they reinstated a summary judgment like that it was never instated. My case was dismissed because the summary judgment was never filed. I've tracked everything. I've got timelines. I've sent letters to the Attorney General. I'm requesting an investigation. I've filed with the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. My lawyer even admitted to what was going on, that he's not helping me. I was in sheriff's sale at the beginning of this year, and I had my two adjournments. Then I went to the judge because I had to have
surgery. When are they looking to throw you out?
10 days after Wednesday, the 20th.
Okay. Well, you may be able to move quick enough. It's up to you. You could do this in 24 hours.
I don't have any place to go. No, I...
Listen. You're not understanding what I'm saying. Listen very, very closely. I'm not asking you to move, literally. I'm talking you to act quickly.
Okay, let me
use that word. If you act quickly enough with what I'm going to tell you, you might be able to prevent this from happening, okay?
Okay,
And acting, you need to act in 24 to 48 hours and get the paperwork moving. And it's all a matter of following the instructions and talking to an individual that's going to, assist you in those instructions or answer your questions or help you get the paperwork done. And if you tell them that you have a fork literally looking to be thrown out in 10 days, they will move you to the front of the line. April, if you're listening, you got to move anyone like that to the front of the line. And just fill out the paperwork. And it's very simple. On the right-hand side of our website, on every single page, you scroll down and you'll see avoid foreclosure. And you'll see a big for sale sign for the house. Click on that, and it'll give you the instructions of what you need to do to get the information that we need to help you for these non-judicial foreclosures, because they're all non-judicial foreclosures.
Right.
Now, what we will do is we will file papers, which they have to answer, show cause, and with a wherefore clause at the end of it that really lays out the fact of restoring you. That's that they're going to default. They will default. One of two things are going to happen. They're going to go and try to take you home and kick you out in 10 days anyway. Okay, that's one thing that could happen. Okay, the other thing is they may hesitate and wait to see what comes of this before they do that. But bear in mind that once you get through the process and they do the default and we push forward. Now, we are, we're up against the big machine here, and they're not obeying the law on any level for anything. And we're just in a point right now where we're starting to do, push for the defaults. And we've got two defaults going through on different cases, and we've got maybe about 20 defaults ready to go. It's going to be another 20 days before those defaults go.
What does that mean, push for default?
We filed the default papers into the court, where the court will then order these people, because they defaulted, they will order them to restore the individual back to their original state. So if they've taken your home, they've got to give it back to you. If they've taken your home and your home's been sold to someone else and people are living in it, you could have the options of having those people thrown out. I mean, you'd have to discuss that as long as we can get the courts to work. And this is, of course, the uphill battle.
I mean, I've been to criminal court. My case is considered contending. I responded to the lawsuit.
Yeah, but you're not going to win under those. You're one person. You can't win under those circumstances.
Right.
We're over 6,000 people and more. That's just what shows up on our membership.
I just found you
a lot more than that. But the bottom line is this, okay? They're going to either take you home, and then they're going to have to restore you later, or they may hesitate to see what comes of this. And once they get the order, and that is the uphill battle, getting this order right now.
Okay.
But I do
it
believe
called?
We'll get
an order
it soon.
For what?
Well, in order to restore, ultimately.
Okay.
Again,
okay.
Look, you have to fill the paperwork out, and you can go out and read some of the foreclosures you'll have. You'll see what we're doing, and you'll get a copy of the paperwork that we would do for you. When every time we send something in a court, you'll get a copy of it, so you'll know what's going on. But the bottom line, really where we're pushing these people, let's say, you know, even people who've lost their homes 2 years ago, okay, they can still file these papers, and they have to be restored. Maybe
right.
You don't. Maybe people are living there, and you really don't want to. You just want to get paid your move on. Whatever
that's
it is you want to do, you know, they have to restore you. But if someone is already living in your home, then you have to make the decision whether you want that home back or you're willing to accept the value and move on somewhere else. That's up to the people. You have to be restored somehow. And
now, what about
that's
the UCC code that they've broken into violation?
Well, that's
because they sent me paperwork
that they might
have committed foreclosure.
Listen, that's a
hello.
We have all kinds of listings of the different crimes they're breaking. We intend on going after all of these judges that don't obey, and if they refuse to obey, from just getting informed of the law, okay, if they refuse to obey. That in itself, and they have to be forced to obey, then we're going to probably go after those judges too. Our targets are judges at this point, judges who refuse to
right.
obey the law of the land and are unjust and just destroying the people.
But aren't they operating in commercial law where we think it's the law of the land?
Well, that's what they want
to
you to believe. Look, that's what they believe in order to
justify their actions.
Themselves, inside themselves. In other words, they believe that they're protected because they got this statute, they got this act, and all this construction of evil. They think
right.
that they can rest and they're not going to be held liable. Well, the bottom line is they're going to be held liable. They should have known better. It's clear the law of the land is the law of the land, and every judge has to obey it. And when you don't obey it, then you're going up against the law of the land. You're ignoring the law of the land, and you're a criminal. And
I have two
judges
pretty much say they didn't care if I lived or died.
I'm sorry?
I mean, I had two judges pretty much say that they didn't care if I lived or died.
That they're evil, aren't they? They have no compassion.
God.
Yeah, they have no compassion. Look, I don't believe in jail. People need to be restored. But the damage and the evil and the pain and the suffering that these
yeah.
judges have put upon people can never be restored. Lives
right.
cannot be restored. You know, years in prison cannot be returned to these people. There's only one solution for these people, and we might as well use. They built so many jails. Let's use them. Let's put these
yeah,
judges
you know. I believe in woe to ye lawyers, and I also believe that Jesus led us in as lambs to the wolves, and that we still need to be wise as serpents and humble as doves, and that's kind of the way I've been trying to. That's why I wanted to do an affidavit of truth, but
right. I'm not going to get you nowhere though. Look, you have to come together with the people. Only the people can save the
I want
save
to.
The
I
nation.
Do.
Okay,
and
only
motions.
If only
I'm
if we
writer.
Act and work, only if we act and work together. Now,
right.
if you have some skills to work with us and to help us, well, go to our directory and look for
okay.
Jan. He's one of the national leaders. You'll find him
who's
on
that?
One of you know Jan J A N.
Okay.
Send him an email or give him a call. He's got his phone number up there.
I think I left careful messages with a lot of you. I just
right, well, look
you today.
You go talk to Jan. Try to get him during
okay.
the day. And work between him and you to discover where you might best suit, where you'd like to be also, and assist us with whatever skills you can and with whatever time you can give us, whether it's an hour a week or 10 hours a week or whatever. You know, we have
oh,
people who
that.
Are retired. And give full time, and
yeah.
we have people who are working and give a little time, you know. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people who give no time, and I really wish everyone would give at least an
no,
hour
a I'm
a day.
Good writer. I'm a good writer, and
I've
been fighting this pro se for 10 years now, and still
well, we
here.
Need somebody.
But...
If you, do you know how to write court papers and different things?
Yes.
Well, good. Talk with Jan, and then he'll create a meeting between you, him, and me, and maybe a few other people, and I'd like to discuss that possibility with you, because we need somebody who can understand some paper writing and understand how the papers work and help us with
that. That would be such a blessing to me.
Let me take an opportunity here, since we're at this point, and I wanted to bring this up earlier in the call, but I didn't. I do from time to time. I have no problem begging for money because it's for a good cause and we need it. So listen, everybody that's listening to this call, if you know, everyone can afford $5 a month. Please give us $5 a month or more. Some people can afford 10 or 20 bucks, whatever it is you can afford a month. We need this money. You know, I go to the mail every week, and you know, today I put out, 30 mailings, okay? And some of them are certified, not all of them. And there are follow-ups to be done with that. A lot of time, a lot of writing, a lot of toner, a lot of envelopes, a lot of paper, and a lot of stamps and certifying, you know, the mail. You know, certifying the mail. All this stuff costs money. Plus, of course, what the cost of the website is, with tremendous amounts at this point. I mean, you know, just on our storage, we're paying almost $400 a month. And then there's maintenance and there's all kinds of things. We have a lot of overhead. And we are really having a hard, hard time. These last couple of months, we're having to rob Peter to pay Paul, and we're just falling far and further and further behind. Mm-hmm. So we really need help financially so we can continue. So I'm begging for money, everybody, you know. $5 a month or more, we can all do it. All right, anyway, back to you.
I'm also a web designer and developer and a multimedia person. And I've written a book called Survival in the Time of Grief.
Okay, well, we got to talk. And if you can give us a little time every week, we'd appreciate it. And it's for yourself also, you know. The best way to help yourself is help others. It's the best way.
Yeah.
There's no better way.
Yeah. And I've jumped into the fray numerous times and I've failed because I didn't understand what was going on. I had a friend who was going through a bad divorce. I even wrote the divorce papers. And, you know, and the judge he was Peruvian and he couldn't, you know, he didn't have money for a lawyer. He couldn't represent himself. And, the translator made it even worse, and it was horrible. And then myself and another woman who were writing all of the legal motions were getting close to being accused of practicing law without a license.
We have courts of injustice, and we got to bring them back to courts of justice. And we could do it. If the people want to do it, we can do it. But that's the question. Do the people really want to do this? Do they want to be free? And do they want to have liberty? And if they want that, you got to get up and fight for it. And this is how we fight, you know?
Right.
And, you know, we've got a plan.
I praise God that I found the site today because I was just...
I appreciate that.
It's just been years and years of battle and praying and crying out to the Lord and I that's all I've wanted to do is it's not really about me, it's not really about this house, it's about moving on with my life and helping other people. And I just know so many people who've been swept out into the street with their little kids. I've taken them into my house, you know, so I am blessed to have found you and to have gotten on tonight. And so I will go to that area of the site and I will call tomorrow.
Okay,
and,
great. We'll look for that, opportunity to talk. So,
okay. God bless you.
You too. Jan, are you here? Did you hear that conversation? All right, we'll call Jan. Anyway, he may have went to sleep.
Okay.
All right. Well, look, we've come to the end of our program.
You're cutting in and out, John. I can't hear you.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I'm having a lot of problems tonight, and I never have problems. My Internet Explorer is constantly, it seems that they're giving me an advertisement to move over to some other freeconferencecalling.com. Are you getting anything like that, Jan? Am I coming through at all anymore?
Did, but till then I didn't get much.
Yeah, you're coming through okay, John. There were some times earlier, but here in the last few minutes, you've been fine.
All right. Well, we're ending our program now anyway. It's after midnight. So thanks, everyone, for coming. We appreciate it. And Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And we've got lots of activities and calls and different things going on through the week, committees meeting and everything. We're building committees of safety. I mean, we're active throughout the week. So get involved wherever you can, and let's take back America. Let's drain the judicial swamp, okay? Goodness, so I heard President Trump say that maybe it was someone else that commented that mentioned it's not a swamp, it's a sewer. You know, you got to drain the sewer, and that's what we have. We have a sewer. We have to get it drained. All right, God bless everyone, Lord willing. We'll see you next Monday. And again, I'm going to ask and beg for money, $5 a month or more if you're not giving. We desperately need money. Okay. Have a good evening. Thanks, everyone. Good night.